Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. We're expecting a crest and more trouble from the Mississippi River in Missouri.
There is so much concern over the Pin Oak levee that officials are asking boaters to stay out of the water. Just a 2-inch wake, they say, could cause a catastrophic failure. Assessment teams have spotted more leaks, which they try to patch up between thunderstorms when work is suspended. Sandbags are still being filled by volunteers at a local high school, and one official says they're being put to use almost as quickly as they're filled. The crews, he says, are exhausted, but holding out hope the levee won't fail them. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
Some people in flood country in the Midwest, of course, have no homes anymore. For hundreds of thousands of people around the country, their last hope may be a bailout from the government because of their mortgage. A government guarantee of the lower rate, longer term loan on the house they couldn't afford in the first place.
Seeking to stop rising foreclosures and sinking home prices, the bill would allow $300 billion in new government-backed mortgages to homeowners in trouble, letting them refinance and avoid foreclosure if their lenders agree to take a loss too. It provides funds for state and local governments to buy up abandoned homes, though far less than a house version, and creates a new tax credit for first-time home buyers.
CBS's Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Consumer confidence is in the cellar just now, and the expectation is economic recovery will be slow. It's the Conference Board's latest report, Lynn Franco.
Consumers are telling us that the current conditions continue to grow weaker, and in terms of their expectations for the next 6 months, this is the lowest reading we've ever had, so they're really at a very bleak point at the moment.
24 million Americans with diabetes now, 57 million more people with prediabetes. The taller headline is how fast the disease is growing in a way too fat America. 3 million new cases in just 2 years.
Diabetes today is the commonest cause of blindness in the Western world. It's the commonest cause of end-stage renal disease in the Western world.
Dr. Martin Abramson at Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. The UN Security Council says no one can take Zimbabwe's election on Friday seriously, saying President Robert Mugabe's thugs caused Morgan Tsvangirai to pull out of the race, meaning a fair election is impossible. Dozens of his supporters in his campaign headquarters were hustled away by Mugabe's paramilitary police, and Tsvangirai says he got out just in time. What next?
There is an avenue to find a peaceful resolution of the crisis by persuasion, by pressure, diplomatic and political pressure.
More than 800 wildfires make smoky red polka dots all across the northern half of California. The vast majority were caused by lightning, and firefighters freely admit there's no way to attack them all. Fortunately, some of that is the natural order of things. On Wall Street, the Dow down 35 points, NASDAQ off 17. Oil better than 137 a barrel. This is CBS News.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
Email. Something people and now businesses cannot live without. New federal e-discovery laws require that certain companies retain email communication for litigation purposes or face serious fines.
Lose the risk, not your wallet.
By installing a Barracuda Message Archiver today. The Barracuda Message Archiver is a comprehensive yet affordable plug-and-play device that indexes and stores all email traffic for easy search and retrieval,
providing immediate government compliance.
Try the Barracuda Message Archiver free for 30 days. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or log on to Barracuda.com.
When the floods come and it's time to go right now, get out, the water's coming, what happens to the pets?
Scary, huh? 28 cats and dogs made it out of a massive temporary shelter in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Some 800 pets are waiting there for a new home, with so many pet owners displaced themselves. Mary Jarvis with the Washington Animal Rescue League made the 40-hour round trip to rescue some.
It was a great thing to do. I'm really glad we did it. It's really bad down there.
The 28 dogs and cats will be cared for, then put up for adoption. The Rescue League plans another trip next week. Darcy Marchese for CBS News, Washington.
Andrew, Samuel, and Elizabeth Foltz are triplets in Cadillac, Michigan, and they are all three joining the Marines. Not a joint decision. They came to their enlistment choices independently. Andrew wants to become an aviator. Sam's going straight Marines. And Elizabeth said she figures it's a good place to find new adventure. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
What if I told you buying a good used car just got a whole lot easier? And what if you could know the history, mileage, and price of that used car long before you even go to the dealership? Well, here's the answer. Simply go online and search Yahoo for Honda certified used cars. You'll see the current selection at the Honda dealers nearest you, along with the information you need to make an informed decision. Feels good to be in control, doesn't it? Okay, no more questions. Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Rocking into a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining us for a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Lots to talk about, great guest to talk with, Philippe Sands, a British writer and attorney, will be joining us in just a moment to talk about his book, Torture Team. Marjorie Cohn returns. She's president of the National Lawyers Guild. She'll discuss the recent Supreme Court decision about torture and detention policies. We're also going to talk about California's prison system with James Sterngold from Mother Jones Magazine next hour. Jason Leopold will join us as usual. We'll talk about the Democrat cave-in last Friday, about the wiretap amnesty and the expansion of domestic surveillance. Also on today's program, Melanie Sloan from CRU will update us on Scott McClellan's remarks and how it affects the Joe and Valerie Wilson civil suit. And we're also going to talk about a San Francisco group that wants to put together a special memorial to George W. Bush. Philippe Sands is an international lawyer. He's been involved in some of the most important international torture cases, including those against General Pinochet of Chile, Charles Taylor, and the British detainees at Guantanamo. He's the author of Lawless World, and his new book is called Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. He joins us from London, where it's after 11 p.m. Philippe Sands, thanks for staying up to talk with us.
No, it's terrific to join you.
Well, it's I can't quite call it a pleasure, but it is an honor to talk with you and to share the work that you've done with my listeners. Because Torture Team is very important, what you've done in a very legalistic and dispassionate way is unraveled the chain that was created of plausible deniability in an attempt to insulate Donald Rumsfeld and even higher administration officials from the development of the torture policies and their implementation. And I thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Peter. I mean, I'm delighted, obviously, that you've obviously read it, and I'm very pleased to speak with your listeners. It's been an interesting project for me to do. As you say, I'm based in London, although I spend an awful lot of time in the States. My wife is a New Yorker. And I, to write this book, thought I'd follow a different approach and actually identified all of the people who were involved in the making of that famous memo by Donald Rumsfeld, the one that he writes at the bottom, why is standing limited for 4 hours when I stand for 8 to 10 hours a day,
yeah.
And actually speak to them directly and get the true story straight from their own mouth.
And that memo, it's important to acknowledge the date, December 2nd, 2002. And in many respects, that was seen as the beginning, but we know that through a verbal command that Al-Qahtani, inmate or detainee 063, was subjected to these harsh techniques, I call them torture, actually before that date. And the origins are very important, and we saw it play out just a week ago in hearings on Capitol Hill as Jim Haynes, William Haynes is his given name, but he goes by Jim, the former top legal counsel to Rumsfeld at the Pentagon, was there to testify, and he had Alberto Gonzalez-style amnesia on more than, I think, 40 occasions. He couldn't recall. He didn't know, Senator. And what you detail painstakingly in the book is that the Pentagon invited a memorandum from Guantanamo and then acted as if this had been the initiative of the original commander and a low-ranking attorney, that's Dunleavy, the general, and the attorney whose name is Diane Beaver. And their names, or in some cases their testimony, was heard on Capitol Hill last week. What did we learn, and how did it corroborate, validate what's in your book, Philippe?
Well, I watched testimony last week. It's one of the wonders of global technology. You can sit in London in front of your computer screen and watch things live going on in the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee. And I have to say I sat partly entertained and partly horrified by a Jim Haynes who had developed, it seems, an amnesia that wasn't present on the two occasions that I met with him. I describe in the book the fact that I had two meetings with him. They were off-the-record conversations, so I want to respect that and not reveal what exactly was said. But it was very striking that I did not bring away from my meetings with him a sense that he had a loss of memory. What did I learn from him and from Diane Beaver and from the others? Well, I think we have the clearest possible confirmation that the story that I tell, the story that I unravel, namely that it was not a bottom-up story. This didn't start at Guantanamo. It started in the offices of the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, and in the Vice President's office. And we learned, for example, that in July 2002, Jim Haynes was investigating ways to identify new techniques of interrogation and was getting advice from sources, which magically later made their way into the techniques that came up from Guantanamo. So I think there's no doubt anyone who's looked at this sees quite clearly that the Pentagon, that the administration spun a lie when they said that the sources of the request and of the interrogation techniques came from Guantanamo. They didn't. They came from the top. And, of course, the administration had to do that because they spun that story to counter the argument that the terrible pictures of Edward Grade had something to do with administration policies. And that's obviously a deeply threatening thing for the administration. And so they've come up with this story. But the story is essentially a cover-up of the true circumstances of the crime.
And Philippe Sands, one of the people who has informed me about torture is a man named Dr. Phil Butler. He listens to our program in Monterey, California. He spent, I think, a year and a half more than John McCain at the Hanoi Hilton being tortured by the North Vietnamese. And he's talked with us on many occasions about why torture doesn't work. And yet those lessons were insignificant or simply, you know, tossed aside by the framers of the torture policy and those who implemented it. And one of the euphemisms used was to enhance intelligence production. and explain what that means and why they were so determined to beat information out of people, irrespective of the history of torture and how people will say almost anything to get the beating to stop.
Sure. Well, I mean, let's put a positive spin on the circumstances in which the administration found themselves. It's the anniversary of 9/11, which is coming along, and let's assume, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, that there's credible information that a new attack or attacks are coming, and understandably, like any prudent administration, they're going to want to take steps to protect Americans. And I think that it's fair that in those circumstances, there was a reasonable basis for fearfulness. What should have happened? Well, really what should have happened is they should have talked to their nearest and dearest allies, including the British, who have experience with the IRA in Northern Ireland, and the Spaniards, experience with ETA in the Basque region. And what the British and the Spaniards would have told them was that abusive interrogation and torture doesn't work. It doesn't produce useful results. That is well recognized in the British context. And what's also recognized in the British context, that when you move to that type of coercive, abusive system of interrogation, you undermine the morale of your own troops. You create a recruiting ground for those who seek to do you harm. And, of course, you break the law. But on top of all of this, you don't actually get useful or reliable information. But those who designed this policy never apparently turned their minds to the questions, will it work? Will it be reliable? Will it be effective? Will it be useful? I mean, I spent a long session in conversation with the head of policy at the Pentagon at the time, Doug Feith, who I think is deeply implicated in all of this, although you would have no idea about that from his book.
He simply never
asked these questions.
Just if I may, I'm sorry. Today, Gerald Nadler, a member of a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee, took the first steps that ultimately will result in a subpoena for Doug Feith to try to require his testimony on these and other issues.
Well, as you know, he did a runner. He was due to appear last week to testify before the House Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
It was a follow-up session to a session that I had engaged in. I testified with Marjorie Cohn on the 6th of May.
That's right.
To basically set the scene for a serious House Judiciary Committee inquiry. The second hearing was held last week, and Doug Feith was supposed to turn up at that hearing. He didn't turn up. The reason he gave ostensibly was that he didn't want to be on a panel with Larry Wilkerson. Larry Wilkerson is not just anybody. He was Colin Powell's chief of staff.
Indeed.
A reputable, serious individual with a strong military background. Well, as we say in London, Doug Feith did a runner and chose not to go, and I hope that the committee will take steps to ensure he turns up.
Yes, very interesting. We need to take a break here, and we'll return in a moment. Torture Team is the name of the book. We're talking with writer Philippe Sands, based in London. Subtitle is Rumsfeld's Memo and the Betrayal of American Values. I consider this a must-read for anyone who has doubts about the origins of the torture policy and that it was orchestrated and designed from the very top levels of the Bush administration, starting with Rumsfeld, but including members of the Justice Department, and one guy named Jay Bybee, who I'd like to see impeached from his lifetime appointment to a federal appeals court here in San Francisco. If you have a question or comment, bring it on now. Promise not to torture you. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juk at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Marjorie Cohn joins us about 10 minutes from now, president of the National Lawyers Guild. She'll give us an analysis of the recent Supreme Court decision rejecting some of the claims of the Bush administration regarding detention and torture policy. We continue with Philippe Sands, the author of Torture Team, Rumsfeld's Memo, and The Betrayal of American Values. And Philippe, I'd like to read a couple of paragraphs here from toward the end of your book, a chapter called Responsibility. And I want to thank you for including the lawyers in your critical account here and recognizing some of the bad advice and improper advice and opinions that they delivered to the administration. And the context for this paragraph is you're describing the news conference that Alberto Gonzalez and Jim Haines, the former Pentagon counsel, held following the disclosure of the photographs from Abu Ghraib. And consider, this is June of 2004. Bush is up for re-election. They're very interested in trying to maintain damage control over what's obviously a very, very difficult story for the administration. And you write, when Gonzalez and Haines stood in the media room in June 2004, the narrative they spun was based on a foundation of untruths. Rumsfeld did not merely respond to a request from Guantanamo. He and his office office were actively involved from an early stage, pressuring and bullying so that a request came. The supporting multi-page single-space legal review was a fig leaf. The real but undeclared legal advice that was relied on came from Bybee and you. General Hill didn't indicate approval of the request, and you note that most of the JAGs, the military legal counsels, were bypassed as Haynes rushed this memo in for the signature of the secretary. You continue in the book. A careful reading showed it to be conditional upon further legal advice from Justice, the contents of which was known by Haynes and Gonzalez by the time the request arrived. Yet they have never been willing to confirm that fact because it destroys another part of their story. The Justice Department memos played a significant role. They did reflect policies adopted by the administration in approving the abuse of Al-Qahtani. And you go on to say that, you know, without access to the interrogation log, and that's what you publish verbatim elements of in your book about Al-Qahtani's torture, nobody could challenge the claim that the new techniques didn't go beyond a bit of poking and light shoving that was mentioned. So in wrapping up your book, what you identify is what's really critical here, that this was a top-down policy and procedure effort.
Well, and it was a top-down policy that was driven by the lawyers. This was the thing, in a sense, that got me going so much on this whole story. It was sort of initiated by an accidental watching of a wonderful old movie from 1961 called Judgment at Nuremberg, Spencer Tracy, Marlene Dietrich, telling the story of how the lawyers in Germany in the 1930s oiled the wheels terrible abuses. I mean, absolutely incomparable from what has happened now, and any sort of analogy of that substantive issue is, of course, quite wrong and absurd. But what was so striking was the analogy of principle. How was it that lawyers who came from some of the best law schools in the United States, from Yale, from Harvard, from Georgetown, could have signed off on techniques of interrogation that were so obviously illegal under international law and would give rise to war crimes? I simply couldn't understand that. And that's why I went through this exercise, really on my own initiative, of tracking down these people and talking to them. And what I end up concluding is it's largely a sort of very unhappy mix of ideology and incompetence. Ideology, because many of these lawyers were part of an initiative to essentially decouple the United States from, you know, international rules that were perceived as imposing unnecessary constraints, and incompetent because they never asked themselves the right questions. For example, staggeringly, they never asked themselves the question, if we, the United States, go down this route of using those techniques, doesn't it mean that these techniques will be used against our own soldiers, which seems blindingly obvious.
Yeah.
But they never seem to have asked themselves that question. And in that failure, that incompetence, that ideological drive, they've brought the United States, I think, into a terribly difficult place and made the so-called war on terror even more difficult to succeed in.
Now, Philippe, I have just about a minute remaining, and my final question relates to some of your expertise in trying elderly war criminals. And General Taguba, who was the fall guy, he was asked to investigate Abu Ghraib. He, you know, kind of navigated that minefield, gave a report, and then was forced to retire early. Well, he got even last week because he signed on to the Physicians for Human Rights study, and he declared that the policy was torture and that this torture amounts to war crimes. And I agree with that assessment. What do we do about it?
Well, once an act constitutes a war crime, you basically are down a completely different route because it opens up the possibility of investigation for the criminal act, obviously within the United States. But that appears to have been shut off by an effort by the administration in the Military Commissions Act of 2006 to grant immunity from anyone who was involved in the decision-making process. But, of course, what the U.S. can't do and what Congress can't do is shut off foreign investigations. And I describe in the book, as I know you know, the conversations I had with a couple of European judges and prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
I gave them all of the material. They looked through the material. They went through the material, and they concluded that there is a serious possibility here of investigation, which is why when the House Judiciary Committee asked me what I thought should happen, I'm not engaged in a witch hunt
Philippe Sands, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Torture Team is the book.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. This is Dave Ross, and for Charles Osgood. Those of you who thought the recent spate of earthquakes, tornadoes, and floods was God's way of telling us he's tired of being ignored, you can relax. A new survey on America's religious beliefs finds that 92% of us are believers who reserve the right to improvise. More after this.
Cubicles, temporary housing for the business world. Corporate America's way of saying close but no cigar, or door, or dignity. These open-air monuments to labor leave you exposed to all the workplace elements, and yet there you sit every day waiting to upgrade. Well, at Budget Rent-A-Car, we're in the upgrading business. To prove it, we're offering you the big boy upgrade. A single-class upgrade every time you rent a car. It's just one more way Budget is upgrading the entire rental car experience. We call it big boy service without the big boy prices. Too long a motto to hang in a cube, but a good way to make sure that all the services we offer, from e-receipt to fast brake, get you on the road faster and happier. So if you want the big boy upgrade, stick a note on that half a wall you call a workstation and remind yourself to rent like a genius. Show off your business sense and you can get a single class upgrade every time you rent. Just go to budget.com/upgrade. Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Subject to availability. See website for full terms and conditions.
According to a new survey on America's religious beliefs, we remain among the most religious people in the world. The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life surveyed 35,000 adults and found that 92% believe in God or a universal spirit. And yet, there are doubts. Look at this. Among Roman Catholics, 25% expressed doubts about God's existence, and among Jews, 60%. And they invented monotheism. Those are pretty high percentages, considering that both these faiths seem to have quite a bit invested in the God concept. And just to show you how mixed up Americans can be, among atheists, whose job it is to doubt God, 21% said they believe in God or a universal spirit, and 8% said they were absolutely certain. Not only that, but John Green, who co-authored this study, says tolerance of other religions runs rampant in America.
7 out of 10 Americans with a religious affiliation told us that they believed that many religions, and not just their own, can lead to eternal life.
Listen to this. Among evangelicals, who are supposed to believe that the only path to heaven is to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, 57% believe other religions can also get you there. And among Muslims, who are supposedly trying to convert us all, 56% say there are alternate routes to paradise. And as for hell?
Once upon a time, belief in heaven and hell were very closely related. That does not seem to be the case anymore. Many more people believe in heaven than believe in hell.
Yeah, well, the energy costs alone make hell unsustainable anymore. Of course, all of this disturbs some church officials who think that if you belong to a religion, you ought to at least know what it says. But then, remember, this is America, where even the Almighty has to deal with the free market. The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggie-N-Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Locals' Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and we'll return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lapert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Just finished a fascinating conversation with British writer and attorney Philippe Sands. And again, I recommend his book, Torture Team. it really clearly demonstrates that the torture policy was no accident, and that the fingerprints of Bush, Cheney, Addington, Rumsfeld, and others are on the critical documents, or at least figuratively speaking, apply to the policy. To get more comment and informed comment on the recent Supreme Court decision in Boumediene, we turn to Marjorie Cohn. She's president of the National Lawyers Guild, teaches constitutional law in San Diego at the Thomas Jefferson School, and is the author of Cowboy Republic, Six Ways the Bush Gang Has Defied the Law. Professor Cohn, welcome back to the program today.
My pleasure, Peter B.
And Philippe Sands referred to the joint testimony, or tag team testimony, that you participated in about a month ago in Washington. Tell us a little bit about your impressions of Philippe Sands and that particular session.
Well, Philippe Sands is terrific. I mean, he's written one of the most important books which documents why this policy of torture came from the top down and not the bottom up. And he talked to, he got interviews with a lot of these people, including John Yoo. And his findings were the basis for questioning last week. There were hearings in the Senate and in the House Judiciary Committee subcommittee that he and I testified in May. I think that he's a very important person. The last week's testimony, I don't know if he talked about it, but Alberto Mora and Lawrence Wilkerson. Alberto Mora used to be the general counsel of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Wilkerson was the Colin Powell's right-hand man, chief of staff for the Secretary of State, and they both just skewered the administration.
We didn't get to those. We talked about Wilkerson in passing because Doug Feith didn't show up claiming that he might get cooties from Wilkerson.
Right. But, well, Wilkerson said that the torture policies emanated from the vice president's office, and Mora is the one who, when he found out about the policies that Rehnquist was going to authorize, including waterboarding, he hit the roof. He went to William Haynes, who also is one of the main culprits who testified and lied through his teeth last week, and he told William Haynes he was going to blow the whole thing wide open and talk about torture, and then Rumsfeld backed down on some of the techniques. So it was mm-hmm. some very interesting testimony, and there's going to be more, evidently, on the 26th, which is this week. I guess it's Thursday. John Yoo is supposed to testify. David Addington has been subpoenaed, and this is before the same subcommittee where Philippe Sands and I testified in the House Judiciary Committee's subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties.
Mm-hmm. They're preparing a subpoena for Feith. Congressman Nadler of New York, who chairs a subcommittee of Judiciary, processed that today. We invited him on the program. I don't think it's going to work schedule-wise, but that is just another development on these fronts. Now, Marjorie Cohn, I'd like you to weigh in on what I closed with Philippe Sands on, and that is the stunning remarks from General Taguba that were attached to the Physicians for Human Rights report that details that the torture wasn't just applied to the high-profile detainees. It wasn't just a KSM and Al-Qahtani, who is variously described as the 20th hijacker, but that very average people who were there, including some people who were released because we found them ultimately to be innocent, were subjected to gross forms of torture, and this is detailed in the report from Physicians for Human Rights. But General Taguba was very direct and rather blunt, saying that these policies did rise to the level of torture, and that we shouldn't mince words over that, and that, in fact, this torture amounts to war crimes, and that he wasn't afraid to mince words over that.
Yes, well, you'll recall that General Taguba is the one who wrote the Taguba report a few years ago, which looked at what happened in cell blocks 1A and 1B at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. And that was the torture that took place and abuse that took place by people like Charles Grainer, Lindy England, et cetera. And those were not high-level detainees that they were talking. And it wasn't even necessarily in the context of interrogation. There was a lot of sadistic stuff that went on. But the techniques had from Guantanamo, so it wasn't that these people, as Janice Karpinski says, and she was the brigadier general who was in charge
right.
of Brave Prison, and they kept all of this from her and wouldn't let her into that part of the prison and said, you know, turned it up. They basically took the command of that part of the prison away from her. She said, look, these people into England didn't show up knowing how to do all these things. This was a policy that came from the top.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, and Naomi Klein's book, I think, offers a different angle of interest there, too, because many of these techniques were developed as part of Project MK Ultra that led to the Kubark Manual. And we used that for some of the training at the School of the Americas as we trained torturers from various dictatorships and other governments in Central and South America during the Reagan era, and that may continue to this day. So it is interesting that we do have a whole legacy of torture, mind control, and these sorts of techniques. And we try to pretend that we've only occasionally used it, and those have been aberrations.
Well, it's true. You're right. I mean, the CIA has written the manual that it was used by many of the most vicious dictators in Latin American countries, which were supported by the U.S. government at the time, and they learned a lot of these techniques from the CIA. So this is not new, but the fact that it's so widespread and it's so public is new.
Mm-hmm. Marjorie Cohn with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, in jumping into your analysis of the Boumediene decision, just a lighter note for a moment, you got to go on the O'Reilly Factor on the Fox News Channel with guest host Laura Ingraham. And many of my listeners know her as a right-wing radio host, and I guess this is a promotion for her to get on television at Fox. And you point out that she has a legal background. She was a law clerk for Clarence Thomas. And yet, in a conversation with you, she was counseling the president to defy the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. These are her words. Marjorie, I was trying to think to myself, look, if I were President Bush and I had heard that this case had come down and I'm out of office in a few months, my ratings, my popularity ratings are pretty low. I would have said at this point, that's very interesting that the court decided this, but I'm not going to respect the decision of the court because my job is to keep this country safe. And then she went on about how, she really has no use for the judicial branch of government because the justices are unelected. She prefers the other two branches of government when they do what she wants, which is a right-wing agenda. And by the way, I think they were trying her out. Fox News was trying her out as a guest host on the O'Reilly Factor when Bill O'Reilly was doing something else. And they liked her so much because she was so, quote, fair and balanced, unquote, that they gave her her own show.
Wow. And let me just recap for people that the president took an oath. And the oath wasn't to protect the American people from the boogeyman or terrorists or Osama bin Laden. His oath is to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. And here the Supreme Court rapped his knuckles for the fourth time. And Laura Ingraham is saying that she wants him to simply ignore the court? I mean, that is so astounding. It goes beyond anything fair and balanced. It's virtually treasonous.
Well, you know, the Constitution, he did take an oath to uphold the Constitution, and in the Constitution, the president is given the mandatory duty to make sure the laws are faithfully executed. That means that the president has to carry out the laws, whether he likes it or not. And when the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution, that's the highest law of the land. So by him saying, and I don't think he will try his darndest not to follow the decision by end runs around it. We can talk about that, and that's what he's done consistently. But I can't imagine that he would actually come out and say, I'm not going to follow the law, because the Constitution requires him to follow the law.
Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, here on Tuesday, a federal court, an appeals court in the District of Columbia, is the first to act on this Supreme Court decision and overturn the detention of one of the Chinese Muslims called Uyghur. And this is a very interesting case. The man is Huzaifa Parhat. And the case of the Uyghurs is something we've talked about on this program before. They've been persecuted in China, so they had emigrated and were picked up, we think, in Afghanistan. But they were sold by bounty hunters into U.S. custody. And I find this interesting that so soon after the June 12th Supreme Court ruling, that this appeals court has issued this ruling, which essentially says that the Uyghurs do have access to the U.S. court system.
Yes, they didn't release him, but what they said is that he can now pursue immediate release by filing a habeas corpus petition, because in the Bumi Dien case, the Supreme Court said that the men at Guantanamo have the right to have an impartial judge in the federal court review their habeas corpus petitions and cut them loose if there's not enough evidence that they are enemy combatants. So, yeah, this is a significant ruling. You're right.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the two or three key bullet points of the Bumi Dien decision, Marjorie?
Well, let me just give you a little bit of background. The Bush administration has consistently maintained that the men at Guantanamo are not on U.S. soil and therefore they don't have access to U.S. courts for habeas corpus petitions. And they've tried to everything they can to keep these men out of court. In Rasul versus Bush a few years ago, the Supreme Court said, well, Guantanamo's on Cuban soil, but the United States exercises complete jurisdiction and control over its base there, and therefore the U.S. courts do have jurisdiction to hear habeas corpus petitions under the habeas corpus statute. So then the Bush administration rammed through the Republican-controlled Congress the Military Commissions Act. And one of the things the Military Commissions Act did was to say, we are now amending the habeas corpus statute to strip all habeas corpus rights from the Guantanamo detainees. So what the Supreme Court decided in Bumi Dien was, well, that stripping of habeas corpus by the Military Commissions Act was unconstitutional because it violates the suspension clause of the Constitution, which says that the great writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended except in times of rebellion or invasion when the public safety may require it. Nobody's saying we're under rebellion or invasion. So that these men do have the right to habeas corpus. And the majority of the Supreme Court in Bumi Dien also said that they don't look kindly upon the administration moving people to places where they think that the U.S. won't have jurisdiction specifically to deny them these rights. So that left open the door that this ruling may actually have some applicability beyond just Guantanamo. So basically now they have a right to go into court and have these independent judicial bodies hear their petitions for habeas corpus, and there are some 211 men and boys who have these habeas corpus petitions pending. Keep in mind that this is a different issue than the criminal trials that will take place in the military commissions. The Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and I think five others have been charged with crimes. Those are criminal courts. What we're talking about here are administrative proceedings that designate these men enemy combatants, and these are really kangaroo courts. So are the military commissions, but these are more so. There's no right to a lawyer. There's no right to see most of the evidence against you or even present your own evidence. You have a right to a personal representative who can actually tell the government everything you tell them and argue on behalf of the government. And the way that the review process was set up before was that the only way a detainee who had been classified an enemy combatant by one of these kangaroo tribunals could have any kind of review of that determination was to go to a court and say the tribunal didn't follow its own kangaroo rules. There was no room for the federal court to say, wait, the evidence is not sufficient. This guy was picked up. He was picked up in the airport or in his house or on the street. He was sold for $5,000 bounty by the warlords to the U.S. military. He's not a terrorist. He shouldn't be here. There was no way that a court could actually cut somebody loose, and the majority of the Supreme Court in Bumi Dien said, hey, that's not an adequate substitute for habeas corpus.
And Marjorie Cohn, the dissents were incredible in some respects. Antonin Scalia was irresponsible and hysterical in some of his comments that this decision will almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed. And you posted a piece at Huffington Post today showing that one of the statements he made is flatly false.
That's right. I mean, Scalia says, well, this decision will almost certainly cause more Americans to be killed. And he backs that up with another statement that says, at least 30 of those prisoners hitherto released from Guantanamo have returned to the battlefield. Turns out that's a false statement. there is a new report by the Seton Hall Law Center for Policy and Research, which says that that statistic comes from a Senate minority report from June of 2007, which cited CNN. CNN said the Department of Defense was its source, but that number 30 was corrected in a Department of Defense press release in July of 2007, and a Department of Defense document was submitted to the House Foreign Relations Committee in May of 2008 that totally abandons the claim.
Wow.
The largest possible number of detainees who could have, quote, returned to the fight, unquote, is 12, but the Department of Defense has no system for tracking the whereabouts of these released detainees, and the only one who has undisputedly taken up arms against the U.S. or its allies was released by political officers of the Department of Defense against the recommendations of military officers. And so what's happened is that Scalia has blindly accepted a statistic that the government, one of the parties in the case, produced without checking it. And this is, I mean, Scalia can be over the top, but I don't remember anything quite as blatant as citing false information to really hype the fears of America. And of course, Fox News has picked up on this and other right-wing media outlets.
Well, and Marjorie, his premise is flawed in a number of ways because, for example, there was a story floated in May about how someone who'd been released from Guantanamo showed up in Mosul, Iraq as a suicide bomber. And they wanted to try to leave the impression that that's because he was always a bad guy, and therefore we let him out and he returned to his evil ways. But consider the prospect of how many of these detainees, prisoners at Gitmo, are innocent. And they're radicalized by the experience of being tortured and being essentially in an institution of higher education for terrorists. And so they're released and they decide to get even. That's a far different scenario from what Scalia is trying to paint based on faulty data to begin with.
Absolutely. I mean, McClatchy did a very important study, an eight-month investigation in 11 countries on three continents, and found that dozens of men, maybe hundreds, have been wrongfully imprisoned at Guantanamo, Afghanistan, and elsewhere based on flimsy, fabricated evidence, old personal scores, or bounty payments. And they documented, McClatchy documented, how the U.S. detention policies have, as you said, actually fueled support for some of these extremist groups, that Guantanamo has become a school for jihad or holy war. So I think you're right. I think it's actually counterproductive. And one of the things that Alberto Mora said in his testimony in front of Congress last week was that he cited high military, U.S. military officials, which said that the two main sources or reasons for U.S. service deaths, serviceman deaths, service member deaths, are two things, Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib.
Yep.
And so you see a direct correlation, and this is the former general counsel of the Navy making a direct correlation between these torture policies and this indefinite detention, locking these men up like animals in cages, some of them up to 6 years, actually coming back to bite us, to make us less safe and putting our own soldiers at risk.
Marjorie Cohn, always a pleasure to get your thoughts. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Peter B.
She's a professor of constitutional law. She's president of the National Lawyers Guild and author of Cowboy Republic, Six Ways the Bush Gang Has Defied the Law. We'll take a break and return. If you have a comment, call me now at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Fritti di Mar Grill in Marina is a delicious haven for lovers of Italian seafood pasta and salads at neighborly prices. Owners Tito and Sonia Perez invite you to their new restaurant, Fritti di Mar Grill, for lunch or dinner weekdays and on Saturdays from 4 p.m. Every tasty meal comes with generous portions of Salvadoran warmth. Fritti di Mar Grill is at 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in friendly Marina. Browse to FrittiDiMarGrill.com or call 384-8525.
Not what your country can do for you.
Ask how many rockets are in outer space. Why is education failing? Ask where are the safeguards in banking, water, energy, health, inflation?
Ask what you can do for your country.
9 p.m. Saturday, The Bob Oliver Show, The Quantum Leap.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
4 minutes in front of the hour as we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Powerful commentary this hour from Marjorie Cohn, and before that, Philippe Sands, the author of Torture Team. If you want to share a podcast of these conversations with a friend, you can do it.
This moment, but that's all that matters to me. How are you?
The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Well, I'm not doing so good.
Still to come on the program today, right after the top of the hour news, we'll be joined by reporter James Sterngold. He used to write for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's independent now. And he wrote one of a group of articles in a package in the brand new issue of Mother Jones magazine about prisons in general. And his piece is about the California prison system in particular. And it's a mess. We're now up to $49,000 a year, the cost of housing a single inmate. And we're at the point where we're spending more on prisons than on the entire higher education system in California. Also next hour, Jason Leopold will join us. He's the investigative reporter now at pubrecord.org. We'll talk with him about his piece that he wrote on Friday about the Democratic cave-in on domestic wiretapping. And he just published a story that we'll definitely talk about next hour based on commentary from Scott Ritter, the former United Nations weapons inspector. And he says that he's very concerned about the possibility of an attack by the U.S. and or Israel on Iran before the end of the Bush administration. Also next hour, Melanie Sloan will be with us, and we'll talk about Scott McClellan's book and his testimony and how that may affect the civil suit that CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, is handling for Joe and Valerie Wilson. And you may have heard about this, but a group in San Francisco is very close to qualifying a ballot measure that would name a facility in honor of George W. Bush. Now think about that. San Francisco wants to honor George W. Bush by naming a facility after him. It's not a stadium. It's not a government office building. But we'll tell you what it is a little bit later, okay? If you can't call in, drop me an email, humblehost@peterbcollins.com, or if you're taking exception to my remarks, fullofit@peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The shaky economy shakes consumer confidence.
This is the lowest reading we've ever had.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill, where a big bipartisan vote gives a boost to a housing rescue bill.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. When the Conference Board asked American consumers about their expectations for the next 6 months, Research Director Lynn Franco says they got the lowest reading ever.
It's really a variety of factors. You've got inflation in terms of gas prices and food prices, which is sort of diminishing consumers' sense of purchasing power. Their expectations for their earnings over the next 6 months are at all-time lows.
75 million economic stimulus checks have gone out so far, and White House spokeswoman Dana Perino says that money will help turn things around.
We are confident that it will have the impact that we thought it would towards the latter half of the year.
But home values keep falling.
Miami is the worst. It's fallen about 28.5% since its peak. Las Vegas, slightly worse, 29% from its peak. San Diego, Los Angeles, Tampa, Florida, Phoenix, Arizona are all in the same group.
David Blitzer at Standard & Poor's says 20 major markets are down from this time last year, but in 8 of those cities, prices increased from March to April, a possible sign that the worst is over. For homeowners threatened with foreclosure, the Senate today gave overwhelming approval to a rescue plan. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
Political support keeps growing as the numbers from the housing market get worse. Between 8,000 and 9,000 families are now losing their homes to foreclosure every day. Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd says the measure would provide $300 billion in government-backed mortgages to let homeowners in trouble refinance to keep their houses.
It would allow us to begin to put a tourniquet on the hemorrhaging of foreclosures in this country.
It would also try to boost home sales by providing tax credits for first-time buyers, but must be reconciled with a similar House bill before facing its biggest obstacle, a veto threat from President Bush, who complains it's a taxpayer bailout. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Now this.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
All right, everyone who enjoys the buying a used car experience, raise your hand. Not so. Uncertainty does come to mind. But not if it's a Honda-certified used car. They're well-maintained, late-model Hondas. They're given a thorough 150-point inspection, and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. Plus, now you can get low APR financing on all Pilot-certified used Honda models. So relax, because while it may be used, it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
They're bracing for the worst in Winfield, Missouri, where the Mississippi River is expected to crest tomorrow 11 feet above flood stage and remain at that level for days. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick reports the levee might not hold.
There is so much concern over the Pin Oak levee that officials are asking boaters to stay out of the water. Just a 2-inch wake, they say, could cause a catastrophic failure. Assessment teams have spotted more leaks, which they try to patch up between thunderstorms when work is suspended. Sandbags are still being filled by volunteers at a local high school, and one official says they're being put to use almost as quickly as they're filled. The crews, he says, are exhausted, but holding out hope the levee won't fail them. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Winfield, Missouri.
Firefighters are exhausted in Northern California.
It was explosive conditions up there, real hot. The fire kept breaking out us and slopping over, so we had to really work hard. So my crews are pretty beat.
Battalion Chief Merlin Turner led the fight against one blaze in Richmond, California. State officials say the region's had more than 800 wildfires sparked by lightning. There's been a big jump in the number of people in this country with diabetes.
It is affecting about 24 million people now, up from 21 million at our last report a couple years ago.
Ann Albright of the Centers for Disease Control says another 57 million are at risk for diabetes. Most of those with the disease have type 2, which is associated with poor diet, obesity, and lack of exercise. The rates vary by age and ethnic group. 25% of people age 60 and over are diabetic. The rate is 16.5% for Native Americans and Alaska Natives, 12% for blacks, 10% for Latinos, but just 7.5% for Asian Americans and less than 7% for whites. Tiger Woods had surgery today to repair that torn ligament in his left knee. The doctor says he's pleased with the results. Time on the roundup? 7 minutes past the hour.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
Email. Something people and now businesses cannot live without. New federal e-discovery laws require that certain companies retain email communication for litigation purposes or face serious fines.
Lose the risk, not your wallet.
By installing a Barracuda Message Archiver today. The Barracuda Message Archiver is a comprehensive yet affordable plug-and-play device that indexes and stores all email traffic for easy search and retrieval,
providing immediate government compliance.
Try the Barracuda Message Archiver free for 30 days. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or log on to Barracuda.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Later this hour, Jason Leopold returns. We'll talk about the Democratic cave-in on wiretap laws and Scott Ritter's new comments about Iran. But first, let's take a look at the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See, me and the boys, we don't like it, so we're getting up and going down. High to low, right to left. If you see us coming, I think it's best. But move away, do you hear what I say? From under my breath.
California has 33 state prisons. At least three of them are within the sound of my voice. San Quentin on San Francisco Bay, Soledad in Monterey County, and Pelican Bay, the Supermax near Crescent City, north of Eureka. On a good day, they can hear us there. And there are now 33 prisons, 170,000 inmates. The cost to lock up one man for 1 year is nearly $50,000. There's a powerful new package in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine about prisons in the United States. We're number one. That's right. Largest percentage per capita of prisoners in our population in the world. And there are a lot of great pieces in here. One of them written by James Sterngold, a former San Francisco Chronicle reporter. And I understand he also wrote for the Los Angeles Times before that. Jim Sterngold, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. I'm glad to be here. And just to correct one little thing, I was with the New York Times for 20 years.
Oh, my apologies.
Previously, but that's okay.
One of those times.
The
one
the
that
coast.
The one that Zell didn't get.
The one that not yet, anyway.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, and I did read your byline in the Chronicle for many years and appreciate the work that you've done. The California prison system is in a huge mess, and as you point out in your article, it's on track for the budget to increase beyond what we spend on the entire higher education system, and that's not just UC, that's the state university and the other college systems that are funded by taxpayer dollars. And we have reached a crisis point to the extent where earlier this year Governor Schwarzenegger was talking about early release for some nonviolent felons in the state prison system. That seems to have been tossed aside. But with a $16 billion budget gap in Sacramento this year and one of somewhat in that neighborhood looming for next year, I see no way out. I feel that they will have to reduce the population. And as you point out in the article, it's compounded by the receivership of the health care portion of the Department of Corrections, which means that the state is no longer in control of its operations and, most importantly, its budget.
Well, you just hit on what are some of the more painful realities of our state budget, and in particular, the enormous problems created by the correction system. And I think one of the key points is that the public in California, I think, does not really grasp the depth of the financial crisis that has been caused by the prisons. And secondly, I think they are under the gross misimpression that the costs of the California prison system are a product of crime. That is absolutely untrue. We have had a declining crime rate, and even as that's been happening overall over the past 15 years, even as crime overall has been declining, serious crime, the prison population has rocketed up, and the costs of that system have rocketed up. It's not just that we're adding more inmates. The cost per inmate is soaring, and they haven't even seen the beginning of those cost increases. It's going to, as I point out in my article, those costs are going to rise significantly faster in coming years unless the state takes some drastic measures.
Well, and it's interesting because I mentioned that the health care part of the prison system is in a receivership under the control of a federal court, a federal judge. And his first appointment as the special master was a no-nonsense, bare-knuckled guy named Bob Sillin, who used to run the Valley Medical Center complex, the health care system in Santa Clara County. I know Bob a little bit. We interviewed him a couple of times while he was in that post, and they dumped him. The judge took him out and replaced him with a much nicer guy named Clark Kelso. And Clark Kelso is now making the same threats that Bob Sillin did a year ago.
Well, you know, Bob Sillin, I don't pretend to know all the details of why he was let go, but clearly there was concern about a number of things. One was that Mr. Sillin was being paid about $650,000 a year, which is triple what the Secretary of Corrections is paid.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, he had a staff of top people who each of them were being paid double and triple what anyone in comparable positions in the state government was being paid. So I think the judges got concerned about the extraordinary cost.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition, I think there was concern about an abrasive, tense relationship between Mr. Sillin and some of the other key parties that were involved, and lack of specificity in terms of what specific things needed to be done now. Planning sort of kept getting put off a little bit. The new receiver, as you pointed out, Clark Kelso, he stepped up to the plate. He looked over the situation. He had experts on the staff review what was needed. And he went to the state and said, you know, people need to know that when they fill their prisons to this extraordinary degree, even as crime rates are declining, that's one of the costs.
Jim Sterngold, in your article in Mother Jones, you profile Don Spector at the prison law office located just outside the gate at San Quentin. And they really are a kind of an under-noticed but very powerful entity. And it's their lawsuits that have forced the hand of the governor, the Department of Corrections, and the state legislature to recognize their failures in managing the prison system. Tell us a little bit about Spectre and the Prison Law Office.
Well, it's a very interesting group, and in particular, their success, if they were in the private sector, they would be among the most successful litigators in the United States of America. They have won one class action lawsuit after another against the wealthiest state in the country. So that's not an easy thing to do under any circumstances. But in particular, this is just a small, dedicated group of a dozen lawyers. And Don Spector, as I focus on, he's been a very able leader of that organization, but he's surrounded by terrific people who are, needless to say, paid significantly less than anyone in the private sector would be, but his team, Sarah Norman, Allison Hardy, Steve Fama, and the other attorneys there, they have really done tremendous hard work. It's a nonprofit, so they're not paid like private sector attorneys. And they are just about the only organization that has held the state accountable for the rather glaring inadequacies in the prison system.
And the other group that I think is really important to mention here is profiled in the article right after yours in this issue of Mother Jones, and that is the Prison Guards Union. And I'm a strong union guy and support organized labor, but even I have been offended by the bare-knuckled tactics of the California Correctional Peace Officers Association. Each member kicks in $25-$50 a month to their political action committee. And they've been very effective in leveraging their political contributions over a series of governors, starting with Pete Wilson, and most notably Gray Davis, who, when he was on his knees because of the impending recall, gave them the sweetest of sweetheart contracts.
Well, you're absolutely right. The Guards Union is probably one of the most, if not the most powerful union in the state of California. They wield tremendous influence in Sacramento. And what's really extraordinary is that they have done a about-face. For many years, they fought bitterly against major steps toward prison reform. And they sided with and helped fund some victims' rights groups, which victims ought to be heard. And I firmly believe that victims have to be recognized and the legal system should reflect their needs. However, the rapid expansion in the prison system, as I said, was taking place even as crime was declining because of the policies of the state of California. The Prison Guards Union pushed that very strongly, but what's fascinating is the guards has turned around. The Guards Union, I think, has decided that the safety of their members is at risk. When you have prisons that are exploding with double and more their capacity, prisons that are designed for 2,000 hold 4,000 men, that is a very dangerous situation. Violence has risen dramatically in the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
The governor declared a state of emergency a couple of years ago, claiming that there were chronic riots on many of the yards throughout the state. And I think the union has taken this extraordinary step because they have woken up to the fact that their own members are at terrible risk. There could be a major riot that could cause major injuries or mm-hmm. death. And I think they want to look out for their members finally. And so they have started to support the efforts to cap the population, which is really a major legal effort that the Prison Law Office and Don Spector mm-hmm. are taking right now.
Well, and I'm glad to see that because, Jim, I've been an advocate for life prisoners. There are a lot of men in their 60s and 70s who are trapped in the politics of the parole system, can't get out of the state prison system. And a few years ago, I went to Sacramento to lobby on their behalf for a piece of legislation. And we were opposed by these tearful people. They were crime victim family members, but they're part of what I call a wholly owned subsidiary of the Prison Guards Union, the CCPOA. It's called the Doris Tate Crime Victims Bureau. And they trotted out some widows who came in and cried on cue, and they didn't even know what the legislation was about. They didn't know what we were attempting to do, which was simply to cause the Board of Prison Terms, the parole board, to operate within the law. And they just threw up a big smokescreen and basically said no prisoner should ever be released for any reason. And it was very effective. The legislators really could not vote against the emotional display that was arrayed before them.
Well, that tells you a lot about the politics of crime, which, unfortunately, whatever steps California has taken that are relatively progressive in areas like the environment or health care or some other areas, they have that's how bad the politics are in the state as far as crime.
Yeah.
Basically, every politician in the state is terrified of looking soft on crime. They all have these images of Willie Horton in their mind,
mm-hmm.
and that really prevents a lot of the progressive steps that the politicians will tell you in private they know are necessary, and they know that they're bleeding the state treasury in an incredible way. We spend more than $10 billion a year on our prisons, which, as you pointed out, is about as much as we spend on higher education. We're the only state in the country that does that.
We're going to take a break and return. Jim Sterngold with us. Sorry, Jim Sterngold. He is the author of one of this series of articles in the July-August issue of Mother Jones. You can read it online at motherjones.com or go out and buy the magazine and keep them in business. We'll take a break and return. If you want to call in, I want you to. 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hello, I'm Alan Mella with Monterey Business Brokers. As a business broker, I market my clients' businesses proactively, handling all aspects of the sales process, and I assist buyers to find the right fit to meet their financial needs and lifestyle. My extensive experience in sales and marketing, including owning a full-service ad agency, guide my approach to marketing your business. Rather than listing everything I can find, I seek quality businesses with good value. Then I design a confidential custom marketing plan and take the time and resources necessary to present your business in the very best light, professionally packaged to the right audience. A 2007 Entrepreneur Magazine survey concluded that business owners who used the services of a business broker got on average a 20% higher price for their businesses than those that went it alone. If you're ready to buy or sell a business, I'd like to work for you. Give me a call at 917-3511. I'm Alan Mello with Monterey Business Brokers. Let's make your best deal happen. Call me at 917-3511.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
Professor David Ray Griffin, author of A New Pearl Harbor, will disclose the truth behind September 11th, Saturday, June 28th at 7 p.m., Church of Religious Science, corner of Franklin and Pacific in Monterey. For information, call 375-2016.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA, and we'll start you in Santa Cruz, southbound Highway 1 at Morrissey Boulevard. Two cars mixed it up. They're currently tying up the fast lane. In Hollister, Buena Vista Road at Carnoble Drive, we have an intersection shut down. Apparently a fire in an orchard near the roadway. Looks like the eastbound lanes may be blocked. The westbound lanes should be open shortly. Expect delays if you're in the area. For King City, Metz Road before Elm Avenue, an accident where a car went about 60 feet over an embankment. Emergency crews on the scene. Tow truck with cable on the way to pull that vehicle vehicle back up onto the roadway. For the Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17, currently check and install an accident-free in both directions with the typical slowing once you get to the fish hook in Santa Cruz. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. Now, if you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you've heard of Greg Kinn, a middling West Coast rock star who's now a classic rock DJ, he brought his band into San Quentin one time to do a benefit show for the inmates. And he opened his set with this song. You can either call it courage or crazy. If you care about our prison system and the rate of incarceration here in the United States, the cost of it in human and fiscal terms, I recommend the July-August issue of Mother Jones. Seven different articles in there about prisons, incarceration. Not all of it focused on California, but that is the focus of the article that James Sterngold contributed to this package called Worst of the Worst, California's Hard Lessons in How Not to Run a Prison System. Mike joins us from Fair Oaks over near Sacramento. Hi, Mike. You're on the program.
Hi, Peter B.
Hello.
And Jim, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. I retired from the Department of Corrections here in California, and I'm wondering if in your research you looked into nepotism within the Department of Corrections. And I'm wondering that because, quite frankly, gentlemen, it's prohibited by statute. And until the politicians enforce existing statutes regarding nepotism and enhance them, this brotherhood is not going to be broken. And unless it's broken, nothing's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can just tell you one story from my own experience, Mike, and that is that Jeannie Woodford, who was the first woman to be warden at San Quentin, went on to become the head of the department and then resigned in protest recently this year. She had a brother or a brother-in-law who was the shop steward of the CCPOA at San Quentin. So there are a lot of very close family relationships, I think, inside the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation.
You're absolutely right.
Jim, what did you discover in your research?
I have heard, as you mentioned, that there are some areas, particularly in some of the prisons that are in more remote areas where whole families get in and sons follow their fathers and all that. I would just say that that may well be a problem. It is not one that I feel I'm in a position to judge.
Mm-hmm.
But I would stress that the deep, deep crisis in the system that is bankrupting the state is not a product of nepotism. That that may be an issue that does need to be addressed, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But that the bigger issues, to my mind, are the ones that are really harming public safety in the state and that are really draining the treasury.
Mike, thanks for that question. And, Jim, why did Jeannie Woodford resign as the head of the – she was the secretary of that department?
Well, she resigned just a few months after her predecessor for precisely the same reason. Rod Hickman and Jeannie Woodford both discovered that the CCPOA, the guards union, was having direct talks with the governor's staff that they were not informed about. And Jean told me that she actually was going to a meeting at the governor's office and found the guards union leaving, having had a previous meeting there.
Mm-hmm.
She was shocked. She said, "You're having a meeting? Why didn't I know? I mean, I'm the secretary of the department." And she was just told that, as a matter of courtesy, they maintained contacts with the union, and basically that it was none of her business. And that was it. She was gone the next day. Rod Hickman, her predecessor, did exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's Susan Kennedy, the governor's chief of staff, who's really the link there between the governor and the CCPOA, isn't it?
That is what Jeannie Woodford claimed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Well, Jim, I want to recommend your article to all my listeners. I thank you for joining us on the program today, and we'll talk again.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Peter.
Jim Sterngold, writing now for Mother Jones. Pick up the July-August issue and check it out for yourself. Jason Leopold joins me next. We'll talk about domestic spying and the threat of a military attack on Iran. Next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Was there a pact or not? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Teenage girls getting pregnant isn't news, but when the principal at Massachusetts Gloucester High School said that 17 students had made a pact to get pregnant at the same time, it raced around the world as another example of American craziness. But now, Carolyn Kirk, the mayor of Gloucester, says despite what the principal told Time magazine, there was no pact.
When we pressed him for specifics about who told him, when was he told, his memory failed.
Principal seemed clear enough in the original story. Maybe he should have been at that news conference.
I wasn't comfortable with having the principal here.
But Christopher Farmer, the school superintendent, was there to explain that, in fact, this might be just the opposite of what it seems.
The question, was there any evidence of a pact, is a different question from, were there a group of pregnant girls who, by virtue of their common circumstance, came together to talk about supporting one another as they bring up their babies?
So, what we thought was a bizarre story of conspiratorial teenage reproduction might simply be a coincidence, and the girls were, in fact, demonstrating personal responsibility, making the best of it. And how likely is the pact story after all? Because remember, it takes two. So you'd have to have 17 men who, when a teenage girl came up to them and said, let's have sex now, would just go ahead and do it. I mean, what are the chances you'd find 17 men who would... Actually, probably pretty good. Now this.
Attention RV owners, you might want to pull your vehicle over because I'm about to blow your mind. Ready? GEICO now insures all types of RVs like motorized, sport utility, towable RVs, motorhomes, trailers and pop-ups. And if there was an RV that levitated and ran on fish and chips, they'd probably insure that too. So see how much money you could save with GEICO. Oi, where are you headed anyway? I hope it's a water park. I love those.
Now GEICO offers insurance on all the stuff that moves you, including RVs. Call 1-800-947-AUTO or visit GEICO.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink, homemade drafts, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Black Forest is also the only place to get soft-serve fat-free frozen yogurt. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center at Forest and David next to Save Mart Pacific Grove. Check out blackforestespresso.com.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I mean, who's going to answer that phone at 3 a.m. now, huh? Did anybody think about that before Hillary pulled out? My God.
2 a.m.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Coming up next hour, Melanie Sloan will update us on the situation with the lawsuit, the civil suit that the Wilson family, Joe and Valerie Wilson, are pursuing against Karl Rove and other administration officials in the light of Scott McClellan's new book and his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee last week. Right now, Jason Leopold returns to our show. His new investigative reporting website is The Public Record, www.pubrecord.org. Jason, how are you today?
Hey, Peter. Good to be with you.
Well, it's nice to have you along. And before we dive into the stories I want to talk about,
sure.
I just want to praise what you're doing there at The Public Record.
We are trying real hard, and it's difficult. Let me just say that.
I understand, and I want to give people an opportunity to know how hard you're working, what great reporting you're doing.
Thank you.
And that you need financial support. Those of us in left media in this country do not get the kind of institutional support that the right-wing think tanks and other entities provide for people who are similarly situated with different viewpoints.
And, you know, the reason that we started this as a nonprofit specifically because we want to be directly accountable to the readers. It allows us to focus specifically on the stories and, without any interference. And I think that, first of all, nonprofit journalism is on the rise. It's a very viable medium. And, it's something that allows us to do the type of investigative reporting we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. I hope people, when they come over to the website and check out the types of stories we're doing, will actually see that it stands apart from not just, other independent news outlets, but certainly from the mainstream. I mean, one of the things that we focus on is we don't want to opine or pontificate. You know, we want to report. And the people who do the opining and pontificating on our side at least are experts in their field.
Well, let me give an example that I found extremely valuable just last week. You published a two, or maybe it's now a three-part series of commentary from Elizabeth de la Vega,
exactly.
A former United States attorney or assistant attorney. She hates it when I promote her. And we spent an hour on the program with her and David Swanson, one of the driving forces for impeachment at the grassroots level.
Right.
And we even went to the length of reading the summary lines of each article of impeachment, because I think it's so important to bust through the corporate media blackout on Kucinich's introduction of these articles and the political blackout that's coming from Democrats. I mean, it's interesting. Dan Lundgren mentioned impeachment three or four times.
Right.
In the Scott McClellan hearing last week, because he thought that was on the table. And,
Right. Gosh,
that's one of the things I'd love to be able to agree with Dan on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for doing that. And that's just a perfect example. I mean, Elizabeth de la Vega is an expert in her field. She has an incredible handle on the law. So if she's going to write commentary, we want to have some authoritative figures doing that and providing a different viewpoint. And I have to say that the stories that we've pumped out in the past several weeks have certainly stood apart from several stories that the mainstream has published. In fact, by May, we were the first to break the story on John McCain and his defense of the Enron loophole,
mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, was hijacked by Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
And I have to say that specifically because we, in the independent media, in our circles, all you have is your credibility.
Well, I'm sorry to do this, but I got to defend Keith because I'm midway through this New Yorker profile that Peter Boyer wrote.
Yes.
And I have so much empathy for Keith. He's got restless leg syndrome.
Yeah, I knew they have a drug for that now. I saw the commercial. Yeah.
Well, he actually blamed his restless legs on one of his recent anti-Bush commentaries, which I thought was really good, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, you know, he's certainly good at what he does, but again, you know, I think that you've heard this from me. You've heard it from your other guests, like Larissa Alexandrovna, mm-hmm. about stories that she's done. It's frustrating. You're out there. You're pounding the pavement. You're trying to, you know, expose certain some malfeasance, and you know, someone bigger comes along and just you know, takes it as their own.
Yeah, they scoop it up and they don't give you credit.
But yeah, but you know, that's I've been in this game long enough, so I'm used to it.
Yeah.
But
well, I want to direct people to pubrecord.org, pubrecord.org, and right there on the homepage, on the right side, is the TPR Investigative Journalism Fund. And if you're in a position to help out, I encourage you to make a contribution, because Jason and his team are doing great work there. It's very hard under the current climate, you know, to get advertising support for a startup website. And I know full well just how hard it is to operate on this side of the street, Jason. So I want to.
And I thank you, Peter, for your support.
Well, you're welcome.
And if I may, actually, since you brought up Scott McClellan,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to just comment on how pitiful and pathetic that hearing was last week.
Yeah.
I think that Congress was, or at least the Democrats, proved to me that they did not have a handle. I don't think that they fully read his book. I don't think that they asked some in-depth questions. I mean, Scott McClellan proved that he was certainly good at his job, that is, being a press secretary.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice some of the key words that he used, you know, the White House marketed and prepackaged the you know, Iraq war. You know, less than truthful. You know, there were a lot of questions that were left unanswered. There were certain, I mean, a lot of questions that weren't asked, and certainly, you know, responses were left unanswered. And I had several conversations with, you know, as I've tried to write a story prior to the hearing, I spoke to several members of the Judiciary Committee. And, you know, we went into some, you know, detail about, you know, pre-war intelligence, the Niger intelligence, the buildup toward the discrediting of Joe Wilson, and those were just topics they didn't touch on. So it was quite an underwhelming, you know, hearing.
Well, Jason, let me tag on that with a zoom out here, because it'll help us transition where I want to go next.
Sure.
And that is that there were these elements of hope. All right. We saw that the Stonewall is cracking related to the outing of Valerie Wilson. Scott McClellan is helping with that.
Right.
We've seen that the torture policy has been exposed as top down, not just bad apples or bottom up.
That's for sure.
And finally, the release of the Senate Intelligence Committee report, with no surprises to you and me, affirmed, I would say affirmed as opposed to confirmed, what we already knew.
Yeah.
Which was how much they cooked the intelligence before the war, and that there was no rational basis for our unilateral invasion of Iraq. So we have all this going on. And against that backdrop, Nancy Pelosi chooses this as the time to cave on not just the funding, the supplemental that the president asked for, but even more than
right.
he asked for. And sure, they got some ornaments on it with unemployment benefits and the GI Bill. I don't oppose those, but they're onerous because blood money's paying for them.
Yeah, but you know what, Peter? Those, by the way, that is a separate amendment.
That's right. The war funding was a separate bill,
right,
so that Barbara Lee could vote against it.
Exactly. They could have voted for, you know, one or the other.
Yeah. Good point. So with all that going on,
right.
they gave the president more money, and they funded the war through the second quarter of 2009. And then they turned around and gave him more than he wanted in terms of the wiretap law.
It's unbelievable.
And I'm still spinning. I will embrace the Barack Obama term. I am bitter that the Democrats, who were standing relatively firm in the House and who had correctly labeled the Senate version a very bad bill, essentially embraced it.
Yeah, they you know, and in addition to that, they tried to spin it afterwards. And Nancy Pelosi is, I have to say it's the worst of the bunch. And if you go back to 2006, just a month or so, even, you know, before the November elections, and you start to, you know, read some of the commentary some of the quotes from Nancy Pelosi specifically, you know, what you come away with is that, you know, she basically sold us, you know, a bill of goods or you know, her pre-midterm election intelligence, if you will, was just absolutely, you know, nothing but BS. And if you just start from that moment when they were, you know, when they won the majority, what you'll come away with is something quite disturbing. That in, first of all, the war at the time, the occupation was at $300 billion. Okay, since that time, the Democrats have okayed, have approved another $300 billion.
Mm-hmm.
They have issued press releases saying we will try and put benchmarks and conditions on this. But when it actually came to doing that, they never did. They have consistently, you know, funded this war. They have never used or attempted to use the power of the purse. In between all of this, they, you know, they banded together and confirmed an attorney general who has proven to be, you know, somewhat similar to Alberto Gonzalez, certainly stonewalling on documents. But when it comes down to certain, you know, policies, you know, what can you or I hold up to show, you know, the type of job that they were doing? And it you know, you just need to look at the past 18 months to see that they've actually haven't been that much better than the Republicans.
Yeah, they raised the minimum wage and they passed S-CHIP to a veto.
Right. You know, I mean, but again, you know, Nancy Pelosi saying that, you know, I actually put this in one of my stories after the vote last week, that during a victory speech in San Francisco in November of 06, you know, the voters spoke, you know, spoke up and they spoke for change, which is sort of funny because that's what, you know, Obama's saying right now. But as soon as she got in there, nothing changed. Nothing has changed. And, you know, just, it's actually a sad reality. Certainly we've had plenty of hearings. And I think that, you know, transparency is important. But, you know, as you discussed last week with, you know, David Swanson and Elizabeth De La Vega, what's the point of, you know, now to come out with all of these, if there's not going to be any accountability behind these hearings and these reports, you know, what's the point, truly?
Yeah, just as an example, we spent our first hour talking about the torture policy and what we now know.
Right.
And the Democrats seem satisfied with the exposure of that information. Well, what are they going to do about it?
Exactly.
We don't have a move to close Guantanamo.
Yeah.
We don't have a move to, you know, it took the Supreme Court, surprisingly, to push back on the administration in the manner that the Democrats should have been doing legislatively.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's funny because Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid had said yesterday with regard to the surveillance bill that they're going to take up, that he's going to try and strip out the
immunity.
Retroactive immunity,
yeah,
and have that voted on as a separate amendment. Now he said he's going to try. He doesn't know if he'll succeed. Now he is the Senate Majority Leader, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So he certainly can succeed in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in setting up the way bills are voted on, or it's just that, you know, you could tell, and I heard him speak, speaking during a news conference, that there was just no will to do that.
Yeah.
Other than someone like Feingold and Dodd, who have said that they'll filibuster this. I mean, the Democrats, led by Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, I mean, they sold out there. They truly sold out their constituents. They sold out the people who really did vote for them because they wanted the you know, and the Iraq War to end, and they wanted, you know, a change in policy. And to me, it makes sense, perfect sense, as to why this Congress has, you know, an incredibly low approval rating.
Yeah, and I think it starts with the, you know, so-called taking impeachment off the table. You show them you're shooting blanks. They know that they don't have to worry about being a target. We're going to take a break and return with Jason Leopold. If you have a question or comment, we want to hear it. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Traffic on KRXA will start you off with a new problem. Northbound 1 at the Fort Ord main gate. A vehicle with a loose load dropped a bunch of debris in the lanes. That car's off to the side. He's tightening that thing down, but look out for a bunch of junk in the lanes at the scene. South 101 before Bailey Avenue. This is in South San Jose. We have an accident with a couple of cars off to the side. Other side of the roadway, North 101 before Highway 85, a van with an overturned trailer. That's been cleared off to the shoulder. All of this giving you very heavy traffic on 101 in both directions between South San Jose and Morgan Hill right now. South 1 at Morrissey Boulevard in Santa Cruz, two-car crash has been cleared out of the left-hand lane, but look for some heavy traffic as you approach the scene. This is brought to you by Orkin Pest Control, where you see one pest, you know there's more. Visit OrkinMan.com for a free online pest test. Orkin, keeping pests in their place. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, that's traffic on KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and if this FISA bill passes, next time you call Elvis, everybody gonna know.
Call Elvis, you won't know. I didn't leave the building, I picked it to the phone. Call Elvis, you won't know. Well, come on, call Elvis, to wish you well. Let me leave my number, I'll break hotel.
We continue now with Jason Leopold. Visit his website, the public record at pubrecord.org. There's breaking news there today, a very, very important story. Interview with Scott Ritter, written up by Jason Leopold. And Ritter is the former Marine who was the leader of the UN weapons inspection team there in Iraq as Bush was ramping up the invasion. And he has been touring the country. He was in the Bay Area a couple of months ago, and I did a Q&A with him and Elizabeth de la Vega at a nightclub. And I really appreciate what he's doing to try to alert people to the intentions of Bush and the Israeli government toward Iran. And, Jason, it is chilling. Ehud Olmert, the troubled prime minister of Israel, he's under the gun for corruption charges over there.
Yeah.
He came out of a White House meeting with Bush about a month ago and said he feels much better. And he explicitly said that he got an assurance from Bush that there will be an attack on Iran before the end of this president's term.
Right.
And
that's exactly what Scott Ritter says. And I have to say that, you know, speaking to Scott Ritter, having a conversation with him is enlightening for a number of reasons. One, he's brilliant. He continues to conduct himself as an intelligence officer when he is assessing the issues with the U.S. and Iran and the policies. He approaches it as he were still doing intelligence work, and he went into some amazing detail as to why he believes that an airstrike against Iran led by the U.S. Is not only inevitable, but it will happen before the end of this presidency, and he goes into a number of different scenarios, or I should say, what he sees as the history repeating itself, and he was comparing that with Iraq, and he said that the rhetoric is a very important, the increased rhetoric from a number of officials, even from people like John Bolton and Bill Kristol, is very important because that's put out there purposely to, in a way, prepare people. he said it much more eloquently, but, the other thing that I think is very important is that he railed against Congress for refusing to take any action, and specifically Democrats, for refusing to take any action to address the issue. He criticized John Conyers' letter to President Bush, which basically said, I'll look to impeach you if you
after you attack Iran.
After you attack Iran, he made a good point, Scott. He said, why doesn't Conyers and other members of Congress, if they're concerned about this, revoke the two war resolutions, rewrite them, limit it to activity in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan, and then say, if you do anything beyond that, then you could look for impeachment.
Let me read one of your quotes from Scott Ritter. We see not only has Congress not been seeking to put any obstacles in the way of this policy, but in fact, Congress is actively facilitating this policy by refusing to enact legislation that would require the president to get the consent of Congress before going after Iran. The fact that Congress has opted out from tying the president's hands reinforces, at least in the Bush administration's mind, that Congress is legitimizing the potential of action.
Yeah. And, one thing that we have to say about Scott Ritter is that, and this is, to borrow the quote from investigative reporter Seymour Hersh, is that he said that Scott Ritter, the one thing that people need to know about Scott Ritter is that Scott Ritter was right.
Yeah.
He was the first, one of the first intelligence officials to blow the whistle on the fact, back in early 2002 that, the claims against Iraq were just bogus.
Mm-hmm. He was, in my mind, he was pivotal. I was interviewing him at the time in fall of 2002, and he persuaded me that if Saddam had any chem or biological weapons, that their shelf life had expired. And everyone knew there was not a reconstituted nuclear program. So he really was the source who I relied most on
right.
for my own opposition of the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah. And I have to say, he's quite convincing, but he's also, I feel like he educated me on this. And one of the other things, I know I don't have much time, but one of the other things he made a point of in during our interview was that the International Atomic Energy Agency report, which, the New York Times and the Washington Post said, show that there's grave concern that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, He said that the media has spun that, and I would just say, if anyone's interested, look at what Scott's comments on that are, on that report is. He really explained exactly what was in that report.
Read all about it on the homepage at pubrecord.org. Jason Leopold, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
And tomorrow, in the first hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, Ray McGovern has a similar warning. Listen then. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. If you're like most American homeowners, your house is worth less than it was this time last year.
Once again, home prices in the United States continue to fall, and the year ended with April 2008. Home prices for 20 large cities were down slightly more than 15%.
David Blitzer of Standard & Poor's. Falling home values and rising prices for food and energy have been a real blow to consumer confidence.
It continues to hover at around 16-year lows. The last time we've seen confidence levels this week was back during the 92 recession.
Lynn Franco of the Conference Board. A bill passed by the Senate today could help stop the bleeding in the housing market. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Seeking to stop rising foreclosures and sinking home prices, the bill would allow $300 billion in new government-backed mortgages to homeowners in trouble, letting them refinance and avoid foreclosure if their lenders agree to take a loss, too. It provides funds for state and local governments to buy up abandoned homes, though far less than a house version, and creates a new tax credit for first-time home buyers.
President Bush calls it a bailout and threatens a veto. Israel, uncertain about President Bush's successor, is pushing to deal with Iran's nuclear program before he leaves office. CBS News National Security Correspondent David Martin reports.
Joint Chiefs Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen leaves tonight on an overseas trip that will take him to Israel. The trip has been scheduled for some time, but U.S. officials say it comes just as the Israelis are mounting a full-court press to get the Bush administration to strike Iran's nuclear complex. Israel's message is simple. If you don't, we will.
Israeli warplanes recently practiced for airstrikes on Iran. Federal health officials estimate that 24 million people in this country have diabetes, an increase of 3 million in just a couple of years. CBS News medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook.
Part of that increase may just be that more people are aware of the fact that they have diabetes. So our efforts to educate people probably are succeeding. The bad news is that part of the increase is real, and we think that obesity has a lot to do with it.
Today's report says another 57 million people have pre-diabetes, meaning they're at increased risk to become diabetic. Check your baby's crib. If it's from Jardine Enterprises, CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports it's a hazard.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission calls them very dangerous cribs. 320,000 of them made by Jardine are being recalled. Slats and spindles can break off, trapping babies. In East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, Janine Neiman heard her son screaming.
His whole body was thrown, his head was stuck. I was terrified.
He was okay. Her complaints helped spark this recall.
If I didn't find some way to say something to somebody, if I heard like somebody had died, I thought I would feel horrible.
Parents are told stop using these cribs now. If you need an emergency replacement, call Cribs for Kids, 888-721-CRIB. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
The Dow down 34 points. This is CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas.
Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
They say a man should always dress for the job he wants. So why am I dressed up like a pirate in this restaurant? It's all because some hacker stole my identity. Now I'm in here every evening serving chowder and iced tea. Should have gone to freecreditreport.com. I could have seen this coming at me like an atom bomb. They monitor your credit and send you email alerts so you don't end up selling fish to tourists in t-shirts.
Offer applies with enrollment and triple advantage.
Some top collegiate athletes had their moment in the Washington sun today. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the story.
At a ceremony on the South Lawn, President Bush honored the NCAA championship teams you don't see on national TV. 20 teams from 15 campuses in 13 states.
These athletes excelled from tee boxes in California, to ski slopes in Colorado, to parallel bars in Oklahoma, to bowling alleys on Maryland's eastern shore.
When Mr. Bush could no longer say he'll see some of them back next year, acknowledging that his eligibility is running out. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The chase reached speeds of 5 miles per hour and went on for 200 feet. State troopers in North Pole, Alaska, say they pursued a drunken man on a riding lawnmower across several lawns before he stopped. He's charged with DUI. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
All right, everyone who enjoys the buying a used car experience, raise your hand. Not so. Uncertainty does come to mind. But not if it's a Honda-certified used car. They're well-maintained, late-model Hondas. They're given a thorough 150-point inspection, and then backed by one of the best warranties in the business. Plus, now you can get low APR financing on all Pilot-certified used Honda models. So relax, because while it may be used, it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Later this hour, we'll meet one of the members of a San Francisco group called the Presidential Memorial Commission. They want to rename a facility in honor of George W. Bush. And I'll just tell you, it's not like a fancy office building or one of those public facilities with a golden dome. As we head into the free speech zone, your calls and comments are welcome here at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Melanie Sloan joins us. She's Executive Director of CRU, that's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Melanie, how are you today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Not too bad. Scott McClellan is here in San Francisco today, but I didn't snag an interview with him. They haven't sent me a free copy of the book yet, but we'll get around to him sooner or later. Have you had a chance to read his book?
I haven't, but I did have a chance to go to the House Judiciary Committee hearing last Friday, where Scott McClellan testified, and I've certainly read enough interviews with Mr. McClellan.
Uh-huh. And, well, first of all, those hearings were kind of bizarre because they had to keep interrupting for a FISA vote and other debates on the House floor. Must have been frustrating for you and McClellan because his testimony was interrupted 3 or 4 times, wasn't it?
Well, particularly at the beginning, we got there and he started talking, he started answering questions, and then there was an immediate 2-hour break for the FISA debate.
Yeah. Well, and I got to hear some of his earlier comments as Lamar Smith was unloading with a bunch of White House talking points, and I was infuriated. I almost threw a shoe at the TV. But that kind of set the tone. It was a neener thing, and I don't think the Democrats were terribly effective in getting McClellan on the record about critical issues, particularly related to the outing of Valerie Wilson.
Yeah, that was my view, too. McClellan didn't say anything that we haven't already heard him say, anything that isn't already in the book. He really reiterated exactly what we already knew. And it just gave the Republicans a lot of opportunity to trash McClellan really quite viciously. I mean, there were at times they were suggesting in their opening remarks that McClellan was just the tool of a bunch of other people, that he basically had no mind of his own and he was just being used when he wrote the book, and he must have somehow lost his mind to have written what he wrote.
Well, and we heard Judas used against Governor Richardson back in the Democratic primary, but Lamar Smith was once again saying that for a few pieces of silver that Scott McClellan had betrayed his loyalties. And frankly, while I think Scott McClellan has shown his loyalty to the United States of America, at least to some extent, and I think that's, I'm grateful for it, I'm still frustrated that he continues to protect the president, even though in his book he tells this anecdote of this exchange where they were getting on Air Force One, a reporter shouted a question, the president didn't hear it, he asked Scott what it was, Scott repeated the question, which was, didn't you declassify the national intelligence estimate that was the first step in the exposure of this a covert CIA agent? And the president said, yeah, I did that. I think that's a pretty critical exchange, Melanie.
Me too. And McClellan at his hearing didn't repeat any of that. He, in fact, said he didn't have any reason to think the president knew anything about the outing of Valerie Plame, and he totally let him off the hook. And he also said, you know, he didn't know what the vice president knew. Really, the only person he said anything negative about was Karl Rove. And he said that if he were, he would insist on, if they were questioning Karl Rove, that he be placed under oath because he basically didn't believe anything Karl Rove said to him. And that was about as strong as McClellan got.
Well, he also reiterated his anger at Scooter Libby, and he told the story of how Andy Card called him up on a Saturday morning and said, you need to lie about Scooter the way you lied about Karl. I know that's, I'm imputing some comment there. And
defend him, I think, was the way they phrased it.
Yes, and McClellan was not too excited about that, and he got Libby on the line and made Libby state, you know, categorically that he wasn't involved. We now know that is a lie. But that was the other piece that I think McClellan did reiterate from the book in his testimony.
Right. He did say that. I guess I was saying that the only new thing he really said was, you know, he wouldn't trust Rove, basically, as far as he would throw him. I mean, he said some pretty negative things about Rove in the book, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really that he seems to think Rove was more deeply involved than we have heard before. And, of course, you know, that's no doubt true.
Yeah. And Melanie, I'm quite disappointed here because, again, the Democrats seem to be content to get a headline for a day or two and a couple of juicy quotes out there. But they don't appear to be interested in real accountability and holding people responsible for lying to investigators and obstruction of justice. And while, you know, I believe that Libby got what was coming to him, I think there were other guilty parties, and I don't know why Patrick Fitzgerald didn't pursue this further.
I don't know either, and that, you know, remains one of the unanswered questions. And obviously Patrick Fitzgerald isn't talking, and Crew has written letters to Patrick Fitzgerald since the trial saying that, you know, new facts have come to light regarding the missing White House email, and were some of those missing email perhaps related to the Valerie Plame incident, and why didn't Fitzgerald look into that? So I think there are questions about it. I will say that Rove had an excellent lawyer, Robert Luskin,
mm-hmm.
who met with Fitzgerald many, many times, and it did look very bad for Rove for a while there, and it's hard to know, and we may never know.
Mm-hmm. And Melanie, since Crewe is managing the civil suit that Joe and Valerie Wilson have filed against Rove and other White House officials, does that give you any special standing? For instance, we know that Fitzgerald has relinquished control over the transcripts of his meetings. We can't quite call them interrogations or depositions, but he met with Bush and Cheney. And I'm very interested in that, and I can imagine it would be very helpful to your case. Do you have any particular route to dislodge that information when the Congress hasn't been able to get a hold of it?
No, certainly not right now. Right now, the case is on appeal to the Court of Appeals, where at the lower court level, at the district court level, it was dismissed, and we've asked the court to reinstate that case at the Court of Appeals level, and we're waiting for a decision on that. Should the case be reinstated and we move forward, then we would consider all our legal options and see if we could, in fact, go back to the Justice Department and ask them to release that information. Also, there's the chance, interestingly enough, that this could happen next year when there's a new administration, and a new administration might be more open, either a McCain administration or an Obama administration, frankly, might be more open to sharing some of these documents so that we get to the truth of this matter.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Anything else you'd like to add about the McClellan book and commentary related to the Wilsons?
You know, only that it hasn't really changed anything. I spoke with Joe and Valerie after the book came out, and we were hopeful that perhaps at the hearing we'd learn something new that would be helpful to the case. And it just reiterated all the things we really have known all along, which is that very high levels of the White House, people were involved in outing Valerie Plame. And it looks like still the vice president may well have been involved. Karl Rove may well have been involved. And we really are going to need to have depositions where we are forced, where all those people are forced to sit down and testify under oath if we're ever going to get to the truth.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
But about the real reason that the Bush administration started the
KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk
with us from Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Ethics in Washington.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Citizens for Ethics.
KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
She's a Democrat from California, a freshman member of the House, and before that she was in Sacramento a very short-term basis as a member of the California Assembly. She jumped into a race when a congresswoman died and got elected, but she left behind a big financial mess. And Crew points out that at the time she was not paying taxes or mortgage payments on her home in Sacramento, which was ultimately foreclosed, that she was loaning significant amounts of money, $60,000-$70,000, from herself to her congressional campaign. So her priority was to get to Washington, and once she got there, she then seemed to feel a victim that her house had been taken by the bank and sold at a foreclosure sale.
Right. I guess this is a poor, poor, pitiful Laura Richardson scenario she's trying to spin. Interestingly enough, last week, both the Majority Leader Steny Hoyer and the Minority Leader John Boehner indicated that they thought the Ethics Committee should consider taking a look at Laura Richardson. Now, that doesn't mean that either one of them was actually going to file a complaint with the Ethics Committee, and we know that members of Congress don't do that, and we know that members of Congress, that the Ethics Committee doesn't have to listen when outsiders file a complaint, but nonetheless, Crew took it on, we took it on ourselves, and we sent a complaint over to the Ethics Committee just to point out all the potential violations there. And the Ethics Committee hasn't said one way or the other whether they'll take that up, but of course we know from past experience that they won't because they don't take up anything. But in the meantime, shortly thereafter, we saw an invitation that Steny Hoyer issued as the Majority Leader to help for a fundraiser to help retire Laura Richardson's campaign debt. Now, I know I talked to at least one lobbyist who said to me, "What, you mean I want to help pay off Laura Richardson's mortgage?" And it's kind of unbelievable that on one day, Steny Hoyer could be talking about how maybe Laura Richardson's issues should be before the Ethics Committee, and Nancy Pelosi could also basically throw her under the bus saying all our members must adhere to high ethical standards, and by the few days later, we can learn that, in fact, Steny Hoyer is planning to hold a fundraiser for that exact same member of Congress who he has admitted has ethics issues.
And you make the case that it's possible that she has kind of commingled funds and that helping her reduce her campaign debt is, in essence, giving her the money to pay off her mortgage.
Well, it absolutely is, because Laura Richardson loaned herself $77,000, $77,500, in fact, $77,500 to her campaign. So if you're going to pay back her campaign debt, you're, in fact, going to be giving her money, which she can use to pay off herself, which will help dig her out of the financial hole she has put herself in.
Mm-hmm. You don't know if she went to Bill Jefferson and asked him for a loan.
No, but, you know, this does well remind me of when shortly after the Jefferson scandal broke, Nancy Pelosi held a big fundraiser for Jefferson. And it seems to me if they're going to talk the talk about the culture of corruption and the problems, they can't then give their own members a pass.
Yeah. Well, stay on it, Melanie, and keep us posted.
Will do.
All right. Melanie Sloan from Crew. That's Citizens for Ethics. Wait a minute. I get my name mixed up. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. There we go.
It's time for your phone calls. The Free Speech Zone is next, and all the lines are open, so grab one and let's talk. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Just got an email with the headline, Senator Feingold plans to filibuster the FISA bill in the Senate. Good for you, Russ. 888-573-8372. We'll take your calls next on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off near the Big Red Barn on northbound 101 Aromas area. We have 4 to 5 goats taking a stroll on the shoulder. CHP concerned they may get a little too close to the roadway, so drive with caution there. South San Jose, south 101 before Bailey Avenue. 2-car crash. 1 car off the roadway. That's all off to the side, but look for heavy traffic south 101 from Bailey down into Morgan Hill right now. Buena Vista Road at Carnoble Drive in Hollister. We have that intersection shut down. This because of a fire that's burning in an orchard near the roadway. Heavy smoke visible, so be prepared for delays there. Finally, down in King City, Metz Road south of Elm Avenue, injury crash car off the roadway and on its side. That's still being cleared up. And this is brought to you by Jack in the Box. Filling up your tank costs a pretty penny, but filling up your stomach doesn't. On Thursday, June 26th, bring a gas receipt to any participating Jack in the Box and get 2 classic crunchy tacos for free. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix with traffic on KRXA.
We're in the free
Free Speech Zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Use your First Amendment right. Call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B.
Take it all on your stride, and it's taking falling down. Love forever, love is free, let's love forever, you and me.
There's lots to talk about, and you can join me at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Woke up this morning to hazy, hazy skies, and I thought, oh, is that smog like Beijing? And the answer is no. Some of it's fog, but a lot of it is smoke from various wildfires burning in California, and particularly in the north part of the state. Saturday night, lightning started a fire in Napa and Solano counties that's reached over 4,000 acres and was described as 60% contained as of this morning. In Santa Clara County, the Hummingbird Fire, 794 acres, fully contained by Monday night. The Brown Fire in Hollister in San Benito County, that's within the sound of my voice, has burned 3,800 acres, described as fully contained by Monday night. In Los Padres National Forest in Monterey County, the Indians Fire has been burning since June 8 and has consumed 58,000 acres as of Monday night. That's 66% contained. The Walker Fire in Lake County, that's north of me, had burned 2,000 acres. It was started by lightning on Saturday, and no containment lines were around it as of Monday afternoon. And another one in Monterey County, the Basin Complex fires, burned 7,000 acres, 3% contained as of Monday evening, and that's about 5 miles south of Big Sur. So with drought conditions in many parts of the state, a lot of dry fuel, we are very early in the fire season this year. And so I want to send my sympathy to anybody who's been affected like by this, whether it was an evacuation or the loss of property. And fortunately, we do have a pretty good firefighting system here in California. And by all accounts, and if you wish to differ, let me know. But it seems that response has been pretty prompt and as massive as it could be in these various situations. So if you've been affected by the fires, you want to offer a comment on that, I'd like to hear from you. 888-5-PETER-B. I mentioned just before the break that I got a news headline via email. This came from truthout.org. And it's based on an interview that Amy Goodman did on Democracy Now! With Senator Russ Feingold. I believe it was broadcast today. And it's a little frustrating because what Feingold expresses is his outrage at the version of the FISA bill that passed through the House on Friday. And he wants to do something about it. But let me read you just a couple of exchanges here. Amy Goodman's question: what's stopping your colleagues from doing this? This is following up on a censure resolution that Feingold had introduced in the past. The argument they use against impeachment is what you said. Whether or not it's merited, they don't want to get bogged down, and they feel the election is a form of impeachment if the Democrats win. But what stops them from censuring the president and vice president? Feingold. Well, I wish they would do it. I'm sure what they would say, and I do understand it at some level, is we want to show the American people that our focus is on solving their problems. That's an understandable argument, but it begs the question, what about history? What about the rule of law? How do you justify not doing something? That's why I think censure is a good combination with our primary focus on trying to show that we're going to have a different regime when we come in. Amy Goodman, back to FISA, the FISA law. The House Democratic leaders called a bipartisan compromise because instead of giving blanket retroactive immunity to phone companies that facilitated the spy program, it would route the grants of immunity through a district court. As long as the companies can demonstrate to a judge that they were instructed to spy on Americans by the president, they would be spared the trouble of litigating. And Feingold says, well, it's not a fig leaf, it's a joke. It does not in any way prevent the ruling from that court basically automatically of immunity because it just involves saying, look, they got a piece of paper from the government. So he then says, we're going to resist this bill. We're going to make sure that the procedural votes are gone through. In other words, a filibuster is requiring 60 votes to proceed to the bill, 60 votes to get cloture. We will also, Senator Dodd and I and others, will be taking some time to talk about this on the floor. We're not just going to let it be rubber stamped. Will you filibuster? That's what I just described. So he's not willing to impeach. The censure movement, is meaningless to me. And he's saying the right things about filibustering, but it's couched in such a way that you can feel that he doesn't feel this is going to go very far. Ah, boy. Really frustrated by those Democrats. 888-5 Peter B. Join me here in the Free Speech Zone. I'm waiting for you to call. Get on that fancy iPhone or your other portable device and call me right now. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill, and Joshua Emerson Smith is taking your calls. Give him a buzz.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LeCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Coming up shortly, we'll get an answer to the question, how do you honor in perpetuity the worst president in American history?
Dance go pro, I know, you know, I go psycho when my new joint hit. Just can't sit, gotta get jiggy with it. That's it, now honey, honey, come ride. DKNY, all up in my eyes. You gotta try to bag with
me. We're taking your calls here in the Free Speech Zone, 888-5. Peter B., you can comment on any issue from any viewpoint and call from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 888-573-8372. And, oh, that's why, Josh, I still had the Gentner on. Sorry about that. Joshua Emerson Smith is our new assistant producer here, and I'm busy creating technological hurdles for him as he tries to do his work and figure out how all these gizmos operate. 888-5-PETER-B, and it's summertime. Schedules have changed. Some of our regular callers are on vacation or doing other things. So I just want to reach out to you and let you know that this is your forum. And if you've been holding back because you think it takes too long, well, there's only one caller holding right now, so you can get through quickly, get on and off with your comment. And I'd like to hear from some new blood out there. So if you've never called the program before, screw up your courage, grab that fancy phone, and call us at 888-573-8372 or 888-5-PETER-B, whichever you prefer. Sandy in Monterey, you're on the air on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. You got my courage all screwed up.
Oh, good.
First-time caller, I'm standing on the side of the road because I don't like driving and I might lose you.
Okay.
I work for the Monterey County Health Department. I'm just a worker bee. I'm not someone to speak for the department, but I really appreciate that you spoke about the firefighters doing the best they can. I was down there this morning, and I do have some good news for listeners that are down in Big Sur area that they are combining the fires that are burning down there, the Indians fire and then the Gallery and Summit fire that have merged today.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking for federal funds and a disaster relief. And so it'll put us number two on the list. Yosemite right now is number one, and then right after that they'll come to us for number two. So that's good news for homeowners. There's 20 homes in the hot zone right now on Partington Ridge, and we're all just crossing our fingers for them.
Yeah, it's really tough. I think that I am pleased at what I've seen of the response so far, Sandy, because this could have caught the CDF and other firefighting units unprepared. Our fire season doesn't generally hit till August or September. And so there's been a lot of action early. The Watsonville fire was pretty big over the weekend.
Absolutely.
And so it's got to keep us all on our toes. And I just want to ask people to do everything you can to reduce the risk that you might be contributing. Don't throw that cigarette butt out the window of your car. Just put it out in the ashtray and you know, resist the urge to start a campfire or do
and clear a defensible space around your property if you are in a rural area.
Yeah.
Under treat.
Yeah, yeah, that's very important. Anything else you'd like to add, Sandy?
You know, I just appreciate that you gave the firefighters a ride on, that they're doing the best they can instead of saying, why aren't they doing something more? And instead of bashing them, I appreciated that you gave them kudos because they're working as hard as they can.
All right. Thank you very much, Sandy.
Thank you, Peter. Keep it up.
All right. Good to hear from you.
The God of Hellfire, and I bring you fire.
It's getting a little close. And next we go to Nancy in Winters. Welcome, Nancy. Nice to hear from you today.
Hey, Peter. Yeah, I just had a comment about Congress and the FISA bill and why they are not doing what they should do and so forth. You know, when President Eisenhower coined the military-industrial complex phrase, he actually, his original phrase was going to be the military-industrial-congressional complex. And I am putting that back in there, and I have been for a while because that's exactly what it is.
And well,
that's
and
why
not,
they're not doing anything.
Not to make it too unwieldy,
but I think the corporate media needs to be included in there.
Right.
So it's a military,
right.
industrial,
right.
corporate, congressional lobby group or cabal.
Right.
And I want to recommend Robert Scheer's new book to you. He was on our program on Friday, The Pornography of Power. And he does a great job there of identifying, you know, the players, the corruption, and it's bipartisan. He hammers Joe Lieberman for, you know, forcing us to build submarines we don't need because it's good for his home state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
He hammers Barbara Boxer for trying to preserve a program that the Pentagon doesn't even want. I think it's the C-17, a transport plane, because it's being built in Long Beach.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and of course, the Republicans have done a whole lot of that pork barrel spending, and we've got the Boeing deal, the Boeing, that's the aerial tanker deal that is now back on the front burner. And these really point up the colossal level of connections between political contributions that go to people like Jack Murtha. And Murtha's a Democrat, and I applaud him for some of the things he's said in opposition to the war in Iraq. But he's as porked up as they come. And he is a dispenser of the earmarks for Pentagon funding as well as a recipient. And so it is endemic. And it's something that we really need to keep an eye on because we never got the Cold War peace dividend. And however we managed to wriggle out of Bush's so-called war on terror, we need to reduce the size of our Pentagon budget. It's up to $600-700 billion a year, even before you add these fund, these supplementals for Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing too is that another couple things is this is why people, the public needs to get involved, and they're not as involved as they should be. They're not, they should be joining their local party, a Democratic Party or Green Party, whatever, and they should be working for candidates like Bill Durston and Charlie Brown and, the woman you had on from Oregon or Washington.
She's Washington State,
yeah,
Darcy
yeah.
Burner.
Yeah, that's it. And people like that, there's plenty. They don't have to be in your district, or you don't have to be in their district to send them some money or to phone bank. I work for both Charlie, and I've done work for Charlie and Bill both election cycles.
Mm-hmm.
From my house, you can just call for, you can call from your house, things like that, or
right.
go out. And the thing is that a lot of people, you know, say they don't have time, but then they'll ramble on about watching American Idol or this kind of silly stuff. And I'm not saying, no, you know, people shouldn't sit and kick back and relax or whatever, but I'm sorry, but people aren't paying attention, and they need to be. Especially at this time right now, all the things that are going on. And, you know, I've even had people say to me when I say something about the things I'm doing politically, oh, are you still doing that stuff? And it's like, yeah. Why wouldn't I be, especially right now?
I don't think the problem's been solved.
Yeah, and this is one of the big problems is the public.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had Scott Ritter speak up here a couple months ago. You mentioned him a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things he mentioned was that people aren't doing things.
Yeah.
So, and there is alternative media, you know, witness your program and other publications and other shows, and people just, you know, I've told people who even agree with me different sources of information, and they don't do it. So, I don't know. I guess we all just have to keep doing what we can do, but it's very frustrating sometimes. At least we can see that Obama is, you know, electable, so that's a good thing.
Yep, and even if he is elected, we are going to have to keep the pressure
oh, yeah.
on. And
there's things that I'm not, you know, I think he needs to kind of maybe shift his position on too. But, but that's what we need to keep working on it, yeah.
Thank you, Nancy.
Sure. Bye.
Always good to hear from you. 888-5 Peter B. That's my toll-free number, and I've got lines available if you'd like to join us in the free speech zone.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties 'cause he could. Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
So,
How would San Francisco honor the worst president in my lifetime and arguably in American history? Well, now there is the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco, and they are circulating a petition to qualify a ballot initiative for this November to honor President George W. Bush. Joining us to explain is Peaches Christ. Peaches, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I think I'm going to get even more pleasure out of this because I've been teasing my listeners, many of whom aren't within range of the San Francisco Chronicle, mm-hmm. and I have told them that you're planning to honor the president, and I've excluded certain types of buildings, you know, like a city hall or a government office building, but right. I didn't explicitly state what your plans are. And I just want to note that Mildred in Coos Bay, Oregon, was still smart enough to figure it out. She called in and guessed correctly.
Oh, really?
But what is the facility that the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco wants to rename in honor of George W. Bush?
Well, we would like to rename the Oceanside Wastewater Treatment Facility the George W. Bush Sewage Plant.
And where did this idea come from, Peaches? Who's responsible so that we can maybe set up a memorial to him or her?
I know, really. It actually was two of the board members, T. Wayne Pickering and Michael Jacinto. And apparently, you know, they were just out having some beer at a bar one night and talking about, you know, how frustrated they were and about the last 8 years. And somehow the idea of this memorial seemed really appropriate when they were talking, and they brought the idea to some of their friends, including myself, and we just kind of all got behind it and thought it was a fantastically appropriate memorial in tribute to this particular president, and set the wheels in motion to make it happen, and have been working hard to gather signatures so that we can get it on the November ballot.
And so it appears that you already have enough. According to the Chronicle, you've collected 8,500 and you need 71,000 valid signatures to qualify the ballot measure.
Right. So we're not sure that we have enough yet. That's why we are kind of bringing the information to the public to say, okay, we've collected this many signatures. Certainly there are a lot of people who feel that this is a good idea, but there's always a certain percentage of signatures that are, you know, thrown away because they're invalid for one reason or another.
Now, Peaches, let me just ask you here because it's my job.
Yes.
Did Bill O'Reilly put you guys up to this?
No, he actually didn't. You know, he has nothing to do with it.
It just seems like one of those Machiavellian things that he would do so that he could continue to bash San Francisco for the next 10 or 15 years.
I know. You know, it's one of those things, you know, I love being used as an example of San Franciscan values. And I'm like, every time he goes on one of his tirades bashing us, I actually feel great pride, you know, for being from the Bay Area and living here. And, you know, all of his points make me even more thrilled to be a resident of San Francisco.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'm delighted because I can handle it. And I believe that by doing this, San Francisco will once again separate itself from a slumbering nation and make a point in a satirical way that we can take pleasure in for a long time to come. And, of course, there'll be all of those joke opportunities comparing Bush to various types of sewage, solid, liquid.
Yes. Yes, I mean, certainly, you know, it's funny because I'm a filmmaker and a performer here and have a whole sort of thing that I do. And I've loved seeing what all different kinds of creative people and just citizens, residents, the way they've taken it and run with the idea. It's really gotten people interested and involved. We've obviously tapped into something that people feel strongly about and now feel like they have access to as far as making a statement. So there is a satirical, you know, tongue-in-cheek side to it. And then I think there's actually a quite a serious side where people are feeling good about exercising, you know, all sorts of, you know, creative ideas about how to honor this president.
Well, and Peaches, I loved it because the Chronicle actually located the chair of the San Francisco Republican Party. We didn't know there was one.
I know. And not only is there one, but he has promised, I mean, basically to, you know, go to battle against the initiative should it make the November ballot, which for me personally, I can think of nothing more fabulous than him spending whatever Republican allocated funds he has to, you know, fight this initiative. You know, if they want to make, I mean, he has said publicly that he is going to make the glossy, expensive flyers, you know, to send to every resident, encouraging people not to vote for this proposition should it make it onto the ballot. I can think of no better way for them to spend their money than that. So.
Well, and maybe he'll, you know, dig into the South Park toolkit and come up with some, I got to word this carefully because I know George Carlin just passed away, but he set the limits on speech here.
Yeah.
The talking human waste.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll, you know, get the South Park guys to do a commercial in opposition to naming the sewage treatment plant after George W. Bush. Well, Peaches, I want to thank you for your advocacy. Thanks for joining us today. And the website where people can get more information is presidentialmemorial.wordpress.com. I'll repeat that, presidentialmemorial.wordpress.com. Peaches Christ, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to take a break and return. How would you honor George W. Bush? Would you like to build on this idea? My ears are open and lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll go to Pajaro San Juan Road at Brooklyn Street. We do have reports of an accident. Looks like a couple of cars, and they are both off to the right-hand shoulder. We had reports in Hollister Buena Vista Road at Carnoble Drive of a fire burning in an orchard. It looks like that intersection still shut down. Heavy smoke may be visible. Look for delays there. Metz Road before Elm Avenue down in King City. We have a car that went about 60 feet down an embankment. It's on its roof. It looks like that should be in the final clearing stages at this point. Highway 17, Santa Cruz Mountains, check and install an accident. Free in 68. We have no problems to tell you about. This is brought to you by Gold Bond Foot Powder. If hot, itchy feet cause you discomfort, quick reach for maximum strength relief with Gold Bond Medicated Foot Powder. Fast relief you can feel working for hours. Gold Bond. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA. Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Want to save money, have fun, and walk a little lighter on the planet?
Listen to Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., right here on KRXA 540 AM. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, as we bring in the experts to discuss how to cut energy costs, how to build community, and how to lower our ecological footprints. It's good for our pocketbooks, and it's good for the planet. And we have to, because tomorrow really does matter.
We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. I want to remind our listeners in Monterey and Santa Cruz that David Ray Griffin will be visiting Saturday, June 28th in Monterey. He'll be speaking at the Church of Religious Science at Franklin and Pacific Streets. That's at 7 p.m. And he'll be talking about his book, 9/11 Contradictions, his most recent one. And then Sunday, June 29th in Santa Cruz, and he'll be talking about debunking 9/11 debunking. And I certainly recommend it to you. David Ray Griffin is a great man who has courageously fought for the truth about 9/11. And I encourage you to take somebody with you who is a skeptic of the skepticism and see how they turn out. Tony in Santa Cruz, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for having me. I am a first-time caller.
Welcome.
And I'm very disillusioned. I've stopped listening to Air America people. I figure that they're all becoming limited hangout artists, not using the F word fascism for where it's truly capable of being placed on this country. But substantively, there is an excuse for the oil run-up in price. I read it on one of the blogs. I don't go to many blogs, but everyone should know about what is known as the Enron loophole. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, and the Commodity Trading Futures
Agency. And if that were closed, the story goes that 25 to 50% of the price of oil would disappear automatically. Apparently, Congress gave them a special loophole called the Enron loophole, but it should be called the Citicorp loophole. And they're doing exactly what Enron did, setting up thousands. Apparently, someone had made a diagram for the Internet, too, but I haven't seen it yet. Thousands of dummy companies, all computer-operated, to run the price up automatically, speculatively.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is true, they're trading trillions of dollars, or billions anyway, because, as you know, the derivatives trade all of the money in the entire world every single day in terms of volume. That's a figure I heard a few years ago, and I've never heard anybody refute that. But the last thing Nader said when he was here in Santa Cruz, he said, just think of, we just put a 0.5%, or he said 30%, but I say 0.5% on every transaction, just as though we were brokers at a stock market. It's a 0.5% on all the transactions, buying and selling, on $300 trillion of activity. We'd have enough, he didn't say the obvious, we'd have enough war to fight two or three wars.
Yep. Hey, Tony, you make a great point. I thank you for the call. And Byron Dorgan, Senator from North Dakota, introduced legislation today to try to rein in that speculation. So
Wonderful. Thank you.
They're aware of it. They're working on it, and I'm glad you called. We've got Sari in Eureka. Welcome, Sari.
Thank you, Peter. Actually, it's Sari, but
okay.
I'll respond to Sari.
Are you Sari the singer?
Yes, I am.
I met you up there last November.
Yes, you did.
And I passed your CD along to a friend of mine, and she loves it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was calling about the how would we best honor George Bush.
Right.
And I would like to suggest starting a literacy program.
With him as the first attendee?
With him as the person that you don't want to end up as. There could maybe be a chart, like, are you more literate than our president? And they could have, like, tests and spelling bees. And
right, and at the end of each chapter could be one of Bush's malaprops. Is you learning?
Yes.
Is you learning yet?
How would you correct this sentence of George Bush's?
Very good.
Yeah.
Sari, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Another one of my girlfriends from Eureka's on the line. Hello, Alice.
Hi, Peter.
How are you doing today?
Okay. And I didn't finish my little note to you.
Well?
And there is no way to honor the worst presidents ever. Just impeach him.
Wouldn't that be peachy?
Yeah, it would be.
I would love to do that. And here's another one of those lame comments from a guy I respect, Senator Feingold. He said, I think the idea of going through an impeachment process at this point is obviously not going to happen and a sort of futile exercise because there's simply not the will to do it. Come on, Russ. You can do better than that. Thanks. Thanks, Alice. I love you. Thanks for your call today. Josh and Salinas, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter. I think the most fitting memorial to George Bush... Now, I like the San Francisco idea, and I do make this pledge right now. If they name the sewage treatment plant after him,
yeah,
I will drive up and make a contribution.
Well, they're planning to inaugurate it with a big flush in. Thank you very much. Mildred in Coos Bay, you called and you correctly guessed what they're honoring Bush with in San Francisco.
I guess I didn't think of anything else. Well, I have a couple of more ideas, but I wanted to say this real quick before I throw them out. You know, I'm really upset with the FISA bill, and I know the Senate is not going to stop the telecoms.
I'm afraid you're right.
Okay, but ideas, city dump, an electrical transformer, switching station that breaks down all the time, a petroleum cracking plant that stinks, gas and pump work.
You got it, Mildred. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at The King of America.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan said the U.S. economy is on the brink of recession, but Lynn Franco of the Conference Board says many Americans believe we've gone over the edge.
To consumers right now, it does feel like a recession, so, you know, there's no need to get into the technicalities. It's definitely feeling like one.
She says consumer confidence is at its lowest level since the recession of 1992. People are worried about their jobs, the rising price of food and fuel, and the declining value of their homes.
On a year-over-year basis, all 20 cities were down.
David Blitzer of Standard & Poor's says the average home price decline in 20 major markets was 15%. CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason reports on an increasingly popular option for homeowners facing foreclosure.
This house was my dream house.
Nurse Kathy Chick bought her New Jersey home in 2006.
And unfortunately, I bought at the top of the market.
With house prices plummeting, it's now worth less than her $227,000 mortgage. Unable to keep up with the payments, Kathy decided to sell short.
Basically, it's my only option before foreclosure.
A short sale is when a borrower sells their home for less than the amount owed, with the lender forgiving the difference. The homeowner avoids the stigma of foreclosure. The lender avoids getting stuck with the property.
A wildfire in Lake County, California has burned 16 square miles, and it's just one of more than 800 lightning-sparked fires across the region. More from CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes.
The fire kept breaking down us and slopping over, so we had to really work hard.
You need to grab some things, and then you are to evacuate.
All over Northern California, hundreds of evacuations, many voluntary so far.
Fire department came to our door and said, you better get out now, and start throwing ladders against our roof. We decided that was a good time to leave.
Tens of thousands of acres have burned since the weekend. The fires sparked by an unprecedented 8,000 dry lightning strikes, hitting an already drought-weary state. Fire crews are working around the clock.
As the Mississippi River rises at Winfield, Missouri, there is real concern that the Pin Oak levee might not hold. It's so fragile that volunteers and heavy equipment are being kept away. The sandbagging is limited to firefighters and National Guard troops wearing life vests.